It's time for Mac Break Weekly, and lo and behold, just minutes before the show began, invitations started arriving for an Apple event next week. We'll take a look at what it all means next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 288, recorded February 28th, 2012. Lord Applemort. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by GoToMyPC. GoToMyPC apps are the missing link for remote access to turn your iPad and iPhone into your office computer. Visit GoToMyPC.com for your free 30-day trial. Use the offer code MacBreak. And by Ford, featuring the EcoBoost engine with turbocharger and direct injection. Look for EcoBoost on the 2012 Ford Explorer and Edge, the 2013 Escape, and at Ford.com/technology. And by Gazelle. Gazelle, the easy way to sell or recycle your used electronic gadgets from your home or office. Don't just sell it, Gazelle it. Gazelle your used gadgets today at gazelle.com. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers iOS. So there. Joining us.
It'd be hard to say iOS Weekly.
So joining us right now, two people who got invited to the next Apple event and two people who didn't.
Not that we're bitter.
We'll do something else.
Yes.
Mr. Alex Lindsay is here from thepixelcore.com.
Oh, right. That means we can stay up here in Petaluma.
We can stay and cover it, which is exactly what we're going to do. Andy Inoko will be there. You're going to fly out, right?
Well, if I were to say that I'm flying out to San Francisco, that would be to confirm that I've been invited to an event on a product that Apple has not officially announced yet. And on that basis, I'm uncomfortable with either confirming or denying my travel plans for the next week.
Well, I guess I won't send you a check then. And also joining us, no tickets coming to you, my friend. No, Andy will be at the putative event. Also here, Jason Snell, who can confirm without denying, Jason is the editor-in-chief of Macworld Magazine and is not embargoed in any way.
I'm not embargoed in any way, and not even about Mountain Lion, which is surprising. And Andy, are we still on for dinner on Wednesday night? Oh, good geez.
Yeah, the clam chowder at the Union Oyster House over Beacon Hill is just time of year.
So
and
here,
afterward, the bells in the Northeast Church will really just...
Here is the invitation those guys got for the Yerba Buena Center of the Arts. That's traditionally where the iPad 1 was announced, iPad 2 was announced, and iPhones are announced. iPods were also announced. It's a little bit of a smaller theater in the Yerba Buena Center. March 7th, 10 a.m. And, of course, let the parsing begin. Is that a retina display she is tapping?
Sure looks like it.
Mm. Can you tell?
Looks very, very sharp. Hey, Andy, is your iPad that sharp?
Mm? Gizmodo, I think, actually posted. They mocked up with the iPad 2 what it would look like. And it's not as sharp.
Really? So that's probably the only way to do it. We can't really tell. He loves his dog. It's just so sweet to see a guy and his animals. So
things I'm not allowed to talk about.
Wait a minute, Andy. Let's be honest. You can say you got an invitation, can't you?
I can't say that I got an invitation. I don't think I can say that.
Why? Okay, Jason. Would you interpret the our delegate from the Russian embassy and explain why he would be so embargoed when you are not? Does he have an iPad? Does that mean he has an iPad 3?
Well, it could be. It could be that he hasn't gotten an invitation and is not going to complain about it.
Anybody to know
because he wants to. Well, or because he's talking to Apple and suggesting that he would like to come, or he's trying to figure out whether he can afford a last minute.
I'm saying we'll fly you out anyway. We'll figure it out off the air.
Apple's ways are mysterious.
Apple moves in mysterious ways. That is for sure. So, the chat room says that they can deduce from this image that the new iPad 3 is triangular.
It comes with a human hand.
And comes with its own female hand.
It's covered in a sort of a sugary glaze. Also, it comes, it's sort of uplit from two inches below the bottom of the bezel.
And only three apps.
Only yes. three
it
apps.
Only runs three apps.
Keynote, Calendar, and Maps.
That's quite a combination.
But they made that choice, obviously, because the map would help you find it.
Find the event.
The calendar tells you it's Wednesday, March 7th, and Keynote
and
is...
It's a Keynote.
It's a Keynote. So that's...
Genius. We've cracked the code.
There's no home button. No, of course not. The home button's on the left or right, depending on how you orientate, and that's at the bottom, right?
Presumably, this is in portrait, although some people speculate that it might not have a button on it. It might not, but probably
will. But you can't
will.
Tell from this picture.
I don't
Could
think
you?
So. No.
There's no way to know. Or maybe I'm wrong, but isn't the dock at the bottom of the screen?
Yeah, so if this is rotated in landscape, then there, you wouldn't see the button. The button would be on the left
or
the right.
Oh, they're saying, oh, maybe it's not in landscape. But there's so many. There's out of the four possible rotations, three of which would have no home button. So
right. And my feeling is that if you look where the text is placed here, yeah. Would you want a button getting in the way of the text that needs to be readable there? So it's probably just an art direction decision. I don't know. Kremlin.
I'm not gonna read much.
They probably just photoshopped it out.
For the first iPad release, they didn't actually change the official Apple logo to a stencil on the background of splattered paint color. So I think they went for a cool, easily cut and pasted image, and that was it.
But we could say one thing that the current iPad 2 has a silver edge, an aluminum edge, and that is definitely a dark edge.
Do we have to do this? Do we really have to do this?
Well, you don't think that this is. You think this is...
Are we really going to be like Jim Garrison? Let's say back and to the left. Yeah. They're tapping back and to the left.
What does the significance of Wednesday mean?
But wait a minute. Come on. They're not going to release an iPad that doesn't match this picture.
Can no, anybody but a lot do an of... anagram of something to see? S-O-M. Me. Me. So mobile me is coming back. Ting, ting, ting. So there's going to be a new audio codec. Ting that... Or higher registers, so maybe a new speaker system. Guh.
Sure.
Well, what do you do when you say guh? When you're really astounded by something you haven't seen before, like a retina projector built into the bed. Like, guh! Look, a retina projector. Okay, so better speaker system, a projector system built into the edge of the display. I think that's a sugar glazing. That's probably not the gloss that comes from Gorilla Glass. But then I'm just speculating.
Some of the criminology is ridiculous, but I mean Apple wants us to see what they want us to see. This is a very carefully shot and manipulated and chosen picture. So it you know, Apple likes having a little speculation, but you know, it and they know it's gonna go crazy. But that's fine. They want people in a fervor for
I think the real question is when is it gonna ship?
8 days.
Rumor is that the iPads have already left the building.
Well, if we follow the pattern, then it would probably be the following, not that weekend, but the weekend following, sort right. of like 10 days out, mm-hmm. if they follow the pattern. They don't always, but that would be my guess. Because once you want it out fast, because you don't want to kill the sales of the iPad 2. So it could be that following weekend, sometime within the
That's
next 10 days.
That's a good point. You can't wait too long because the iPad 2 is not going to sell for whatever period of time that is.
Right. You only do the long range announcements if you're not killing an existing product right. with whatever you're right. doing. So,
and it's not impossible to believe that they would ship it on the Saturday.
No, right. It's possible. So somewhere between probably, you know, somewhere between the 7th and the 17th. Right?
It's possible that they could say, as they have sometimes, walk down to the Apple store and pick one up today.
Yeah. Given the secrecy of this product, they'll probably have a couple of days, I would think. But it could be that Friday or that Saturday or the following
Friday
or Saturday.
We had been hearing rumors last year, you know, like in November, that they were already manufacturing these guys. So, I mean... They've got a stockpile somewhere,
yeah.
right? I don't think we need to say any more about rumors that we've all talked ad nauseum about, whether it's a quad core or a dual core, an A5X or an A6. The only thing that invitation really tells us is that it's kind of is a Retina display, yes?
That's the implication, yeah. right? I mean,
I think that would officially be Apple is screwing with everybody if they released that image and did not intend for people to conclude that there's a Retina display involved. That would be kind of going over the line. Like if the image were like of an eye and you could sort of see in the back of the eye they could be, maybe they're being cute about, oh, well, no, it's not a Retina display, but we want to see, we want to just demonstrate that it's a better camera, so you're seeing better. Well, we didn't even think that someone would think that it's a Retina display. But to release an image like that of a what appears to be a higher resolution iPad screen, that would be screwed.
I think they should have used this image for the invitation.
They're coming.
Their Chinese plane. This is tweeted by somebody named Sonny Dixon. He says, look, pallets of iPads.
This is proof.
This is proof.
I don't know how what proof
I don't know
is.
How you could tell.
I took a picture of some pallets going into a plane.
Something.
That happens, you know, pretty often, actually, around the world.
It's those pretty funny. Also, there are rumors that it's going to be $80 more. I don't know where that came from. Was it a leak to...
Yes, a Chinese microblogging platform.
Oh, please.
Post money. Yeah, so.
Okay. And that there would be two products, which is, a reasonable speculation, given that... it would make sense they keep the iPad 2 around as a low-cost item, right, given the pressure they're getting from the bottom.
They've done that with the iPhone, so it makes total sense for the iPad, which is a more expensive product because it's not subsidized. Why not keep the iPad 2 around and have it be a little cheaper?
Now, do we think that it would be $399 or
$299? Wow. I don't think they go as low as $299. I think they'd have to feel real pressure to break the $300 barrier.
I'd split the difference. It's $349.
I think if Apple is intending to go for a cheaper one, they would go for $349 or $399. Mm-hmm. They don't have to push that far to sort of tip the boat. They don't have to kill the Kindle Fire. They just have to kill every other Android tablet that's selling for $300 to $399.
Because I have to say that if they did $299, there would be no oxygen left. that's pretty much an iPad 2 at $299 would be pretty much all the oxygen gone.
As strong as the Kindle Fire is, and boy, we saw an interesting revelation at Mobile World Congress. It was called Mac World Congress. At Mobile World Congress from a Samsung executive who said that, we can't sell these tablets. he didn't say quite like that, but that was the strong implication. They're not doing that well. That the only tablet at all that's threatening Apple is the Kindle Fire.
Right.
But I don't think you need to go to $200. Why? Let them have $200. Let it give it to them. Why do you care?
Apple likes to make money on the products they sell, right?
Yeah.
So having the margin there is good. And the iPad's not hurting now at $499. So even if you went down to $399, it would be huge news, I think. And
Robert's pointing out, Robert Bigelow in our chat room, is that the refurbs from the Apple online store are $299. So I don't know if that gives you a price point.
Well, the other consideration is that once they drop the price, they can never raise it again for any reason.
Right.
So given that Tim Cook was asked this question kind of directly about pressure from Android tablets and specifically from the Fire and said, we don't feel as though it's stealing any sales away from the iPad in any way, shape, or form, that's a clear indication that they don't feel any pressure to make any moves in response to other tablets that are on the market right now.
Does that assertion that they can't raise the price also apply to this $80 increase? In other words, do you think, because that is raising the price on the iPad.
I would be surprised if they raise the level of the buy-in for the iPad. I mean, they still need
a $499, you mean?
If this rumor is true, I think that would mean that there is going to be a Retina quality display that would be more expensive and a standard quality display that would hold the line at $499.
Who would buy? Who would
or possibly go down?
Who would not buy a $499? Who would not spend $80?
It gets
more?
You in the door, though. That low price gets you in the door. Yeah. You're like, it's now $399, and then you end up with a $600.
No,
iPad.
I think they should do an iPad 2 at $350.
Right,
$350 is what I would say. That's clear, and that's for education too. If you're going to push this textbook initiative, for instance, the high school that I am on the board of, my kids go to, is making this exact decision right now. Apple's discontinued the polycarbonate MacBook that they've been giving. They do a one-to-one program. And when kids go in, they get a laptop, so they have to replace it. The Air is more expensive, so they're looking at the iPad. They're also looking at Chromebooks. Those are the three kind of choices that are out there for them. Chromebook is very appealing from a cost point of view. It's $20 per student per month, and they'll just, something goes wrong, they give you a different one. You talk $350 for an iPad, too. Part of the concern with an iPad is breakability. But at $350, that's less of a concern.
Ryan.
Well, I also think that when you look at iPad, when you look at the iBooks author, from a school's perspective, they have to factor that in.
Well, what it means, if you can get it low enough, is that you could have both. You could give them a Chromebook and an iPad with the textbooks on it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I
don't think they're going to do that. I think that the right now, unless someone does something pretty decisive, I think that the iPad is going to start becoming a standard in corporations and education.
It needs a keyboard for a school.
Not necessarily.
Kids aren't going to write a paper on glass.
Yeah, but they got computers at home for that. They don't necessarily need to have the thing that they're toting around from classroom to classroom. That really the killer app for a classroom computer is the courseware, and not necessarily preparing these things. Also, writing is taking, I don't know if it's a back seat to presentations right now, but it's almost on equal footing as being able to simply stand up for 10 minutes and explain the solar system instead of having to write a 3-page paper on it and take photocopies out of the Encyclopedia Britannica for your media content.
I hate to tell you, but schools are not abandoning the requirement to write a lot.
I don't think they're abandoning it, but it's not.
That's not going away, I can tell you. As a member of the Board of Trustees, I'm not letting it go away. Kids need to learn how to write.
But I have to admit that if I was in school right now, if I was in high school, I'd be, dictating everything. There's no way I would type.
Really?
I wouldn't. I mean, I dictate most of anything long form
now.
How
do you correct it without a keyboard?
That's a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
You can. It just depends on how good you are.
You can also just use a keyboard, future. Right? I mean, the iPad does work fine with.
Well, that's
the
what I've been telling them. I'm saying if you buy iPads, add $100 because you're going to buy an external keyboard.
Maybe not one to one, but yeah.
Yeah.
But what if they're relying on the computers they have at home?
You can never assume the kid has a computer at home. That's not allowed. That's not the presumption. You're given a computer because they may not have a computer at home, and you want them to have a computer.
Well, I think that's
to back up just a second. Remember that Apple's been building the iPad 2, and they've been sourcing that screen for a couple of years now. So if there's any iPad in the line that could possibly be driven down in price, not necessarily this year, but maybe next year, it would be the iPad 2 or any iPad that has that standards definition to screen. Whereas the ones that require this new component, they're probably going to be in scarce supply as they start to ramp up, and it's probably a lot more expensive to manufacture. That's the one where there's no way in hell they can possibly submarine the price any lower than the introduction price. So it's possible that maybe they'll keep this one at sort of a slight at the same price, with the idea that when it comes time for holiday sales, that's when they stick people with the $250 or the $300 or the $350 new price.
Well, we'll all know soon.
Victory!
We will know in 8 days.
I bow to you, sir.
We
will know.
That's the good news. March 7th is the official date. We will do, we've been planning for this. We'll do live coverage, of course, of the event. And if Andy should get an invitation and show up, maybe we'll be talking to him. Otherwise, Jason, would you like to join us?
I'll be down there.
What we need and what we like to do, and we presume, is that there will be a demo room after the keynote that somebody can go over.
Right.
And
there usually is.
It's one of you two guys. Whoever has an invitation can do that.
And for the answer to that question, tune in to the new Twit TV reality TV show in which we compete.
You guys have to fight it off.
I'm Team Excelsior. Jason's representing Team Birch Bark.
But one thing we know for sure, Alex and I will be sitting here.
Yes, in lovely Petaluma.
Fortunately, will you be even in town?
Yeah, I'm actually coming back just for this.
Just for this? Yeah. Awesome, awesome. Yeah. So we will have live coverage starting, we'll start around 9:30 a.m. Pacific. The event starts at 10 a.m. And we've already moved security now to Tuesday for next week. Steve Gibson volunteered already. He said, I said, yes, why plan on it? So I'm glad that they're like actually doing it.
George Lopez volunteered to move his show to midnight after Conan got his deal.
I volunteer. Actually, I can't wait. I hope it's a Retina display. I think it is, and I cannot wait to get one. I mean, we spent a lot of time parsing and dribbling and so forth, but I think this is a Retina display on a tablet that size. Can we think about what that would look like? It's a higher DPI than anything we've seen.
I think
before,
it would look like a lot like an iPhone, but bigger.
It's a lot of pixels too. It's if you think about it,
it's 2 megapixels. Is it?
Math is not my skill, but
calculator.
But it would be enormous.
3 megapixels, I believe.
Yeah. So that there has to be a lot of graphics power in that thing just to push all those pixels, because it'll be greater than a 1080. HD.
It's 3.1415. It's pi pixels.
Pi megapixels.
Pi display.
It's pi megapixels.
It's close.
The new custard display from Apple.
Tim Cook's going to come out and say, okay, who wants pi?
It is literally 3.14 megapixels. 3.145 megapixels. Huh?
But the 5 is when it goes off the reservation.
If you imagine reading on an iPhone, I mean, picture the clarity of text reading on an iPad. And then
is it the same DPI as an iPhone?
Well, it's unclear. It's double what the iPad is.
Yeah, but so. It's not. I don't believe it's actually.
It's a little less than.
It's a little less. Retina. The DPI is a little less.
Yeah, it's retina because you hold it further away, and then it's imperceptible. But Andy, as a comic book reader, I mean, what struck me.
Oh, imagine
the file downloads are going to be huge, but magazines and comic books on this, the quality of the images you're going to be able to get over the iPad, which is not bad, but you can see the pixels, and on this new one. I try to imagine that, and it's could be very cool.
Well, and as you start,
it'll certainly elevate everything that's being presented on the iPad. But the problem with a comic book app is that a company like Comixology, they're not beholden to the technology. They're beholden to Marvel and DC, who may not be willing to release such high definition page views, because not realize that every single iPad has that really cool screen capture mode. And if they want to, they're essentially giving people the permission to have 3 megapixel screen images of every digitally crisp and pure to then spend all of 20 minutes combining into a CBR or a CBZ file and then uploading. So they may put the kibosh on that.
It'll be interesting to see. It's like having high-quality iTunes music files or something like that. Also, Comixology and companies like that are going to have to decide, you know, they're going to have to detect, oh, you're on a Retina display, so we'll download this. Do you want us to download this giant comic file that's going to take forever to download versus just the lower-quality one that we can download fast?
Well, I think the other question is what sizes of what memory are we going to see, you know, built into this? Because I think that if you're starting to look at putting out, you know, books and, you know, anything, all the apps, everything are going to be much larger.
It's going to tax a 3G, like a 3G or even a 4G.
Well, I'm just talking about I think you have to be looking at 120. I think one of the reasons that we might see a size increase is possibly putting some of the memory that they're using for the netbooks into it. You know, I think that in some ways you have to start thinking about 128 and 256 gigabytes of RAM. At least 128. I think that I'd be very surprised if we don't see 128.
So the 2048 by 1536 on a 10.1 inch screen is a pixel per inch of 253. The iPhone is 164. Can that be right?
That's the original.
That's iPhone. The original iPhone. I need the Retina display. Here we go. There's the Retina.
It's double. It's
329.
Yeah. So it's not as high DPI as the. As the iPhone.
Close enough for government work. Government work.
Double what we have now.
Wow.
I mean, to put it in perspective, I think that if I can remember back in my print days, an art magazine is, 175 to 200 DPI.
This is more than that.
I mean, we didn't.
250.
Very rarely did we see a magazine printed any higher resolution than that.
Oh, it's 9.7
inches.
Time
magazine at 133.
So it's 263 DPI on a 9.7-inch screen. That's great.
It's going to look really good.
If you think about the things that will hit the consumer first off, it's going to be the clarity of the display. Even if it's just the Kindle app, even if it's just the iBooks app, the fact that they can get large print, full screen display that is absolutely flawless. Not only that, but now we can finally get like a two-up display with the actual page turns in which both pages are in ultra high definition and look like reading like a regular paperback book. I'm not even 100% convinced that Apple has anything really major new planned to exploit the higher definition iPad display beyond high definition movies. It's just enough to make sure that every time you look at this screen, you are impressed with how beautiful and how wonderful and luxurious the readability of this device is.
Apple 27, just to put this in perspective, it's less than half the DPI of the new iPad.
It's a lower resolution. I mean, your 27-inch iMac is doing
2560 by 1440.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the smaller iMac, I think, has fewer pixels than the iPad.
But I'm talking about the big
27-inch. Is 1920 by 1080.
Which leads one to the question, I would guess that Apple will be doing this across the board, right? They'll start doing it on, can you get LCDs that are Retina for that size?
So I'm saying if you have $100 billion, you can get anything.
Yeah. And I do
think
there's
pressure to make that. There's pressure to make that. And that's, now we're in a different world.
Well, when you start thinking about the possibility of an Apple TV and whether the 42-inch Apple TV and whether they make that, how high resolution do they make that?
But that doesn't matter for TV because no content is going to take advantage of that, right?
And you're far enough back that really 1080 is going to do you. But on your laptop, to have double resolution on a laptop, have the text be that much crisper?
Yeah. As long as everything's fast. I mean, the hard part is that it's as long as it's crisper and not smaller, because That's the biggest problem.
No,
I
that's
have right
that's
now.
The trick, right? Is that yeah. is they can make it higher resolution now. My 11-inch Air that I have right here is higher resolution than most Apple products were before.
Right.
And I had to crank up the fonts because everything's smaller. But if they do a double resolution and they can just pixel double it, then right. you're making a Retina display.
Here's the Gizmodo comparison that you mentioned. On the yeah. on the right would be a standard iPad, on the left would be the
it's great. They posed. They got a finger, a fat finger, but it's a finger.
And that's pretty clear. You could see the fact that the aliasing on the 7. I think it's pretty clear. The the word calendar is not nearly as clear, although that could be an artifact of the camera.
It's hard
angle.
To tell. Yeah. It's hard to tell, but it looks awfully clear. Then again, photos can.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, it depends how you took the picture.
This is the image Apple chose, and it's imparting clarity on the screen. That's what that picture.
Well, look at the fingerprints on the left versus the fingerprint on the right. I mean, I think there is a there is a clarity.
Notice the man with the in the trench coat who opens his umbrella at frame number 143.
All right. Andy hates this crap.
I'm just saying.
I got it.
That was one magic iPad.
All right. We're going to take a break. Andy can take his cynic sauce, and we'll continue on. It is. You're right. It's not called. You know, Mac Rumor Weekly. It's just the facts, man.
Yeah.
Just the facts. This show brought to you today by the folks at Citrix and GoToMyPC. Do not be fooled by the name. They really ought to rename it. Go to my Mac. Could be. It's the same. GoToMyPC.com. And even better, maybe GoToMyMacWithMyiPhone.com. GoToMyPC is the missing link for remote access. It will turn your iPad and now your iPhone into your office computer. And that is mind-boggling. Imagine, you know, you're off, as I was yesterday, in a mad dash to the airport, and you forgot your keynote presentation. Oh, my. It's on the computer. Oh, my goodness. What am I going to do? You fire up GoToMyPC on your iPhone. Wait till you get to the airport. And there it is. And you can download it. You can access it. You can edit it. You can send and receive email. You can. I mean, it's convenient. It's reliable. And it works on the iPad. Wow. Yeah, the iPad 3 is going to be amazing for this. It's going to be amazing. GoToMyPC, it's a lifesaver when you're away from the office. You have access to your entire office computer right in your pocket, Mac or Windows. And you can try it free right now if you visit GoToMyPC.com. The offer code is MacBreak. So click the Try It Free button right there and use the offer code MacBreak. And then once you've got it, go download the free app on your iPhone and iPad. Make sure you have it because you never know when you're going to need to access that office computer. It's a little weird to run Windows 7 on an iPhone, but you can. You can. That's what's amazing. And on the Retina display, it's actually very usable, but I cannot wait to see it on a Retina on an iPad 3. This would be a good time to try it out. Go to mypc.com. Offer code is MacBreak, 30 days free, unlimited use. And then, by the way, get the free apps so that you can try it out. And also, for those of you who are iconoclasts, also works on Android.
I just suddenly realized how much easier it's going to be to share through your iPad when it's that resolution.
Oh, yeah.
If you're sharing to a desktop machine.
Yeah.
You really have. Because a 1024 by 768, it's a little bit
tough. But,
cumbersome.
But double that resolution. Yeah. You have more resolution on your iPad than you actually have on the desktop. You'll have room for a keyboard. And I mean, it'll be amazing. Can't wait. And they handle that, of course, transparently and beautifully. Of course, they'll have to update the app, though, right? Now, that's what's going to be a question mark is will apps... We already see doubling from iPhone to iPad. It works okay. Some apps better than others. Text-heavy apps work great. Graphics, not so well.
Right. This happened with the iPhone 4 transition, where the Retina display came out and all the app developers rushed to drop in 2X graphics for their iPhone apps.
Now, so, they've kind of known about this for a while, haven't they?
I think if you're an app developer, you've had your iPad 2X graphics ready to go, knowing that this was probably going to happen.
Not? Right.
And they'll get presumably maybe a week or 10 days. I would imagine you'll see a lot of app updates for iPad apps saying adds Retina graphics for the iPad 3.
Because right. oftentimes there is an opportunity to get featured on the App Store
right.
If you are following
lots
the line.
Of incentives. Isn't there
that
lots
is
of
the
incentives?
Carrot.
Yeah.
And it's worth tens of thousands of dollars just to upgrade your graphics. I think they're going to work it out.
It's a little more challenging if you're Infinity Blade and you have a lot of assets that you have to upgrade.
Right.
But Infinity Blade. At 2048 by 1536. Plants versus zombies. Now that's okay. That's the other question. That's why you got to get a faster processor, or maybe not a faster processor. Maybe the 5X is an improved GPU.
Right, right. A lot of improvements are going to be needed in the graphics performance.
It's the GPU.
Because there are so many pixels.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Or both.
Or both.
What's your position on the quad core question? Because there's debate.
Wow. You know, I don't think Apple's ever going to do a quad core because they feel like they need the feature box. Because they figured out in their chip development that they can take advantage of those four cores.
That's a really good point.
Because the multiple core thing always comes down to, can you split up the job into four different tasks? Otherwise, those cores just sort of sit there. Or you can shut them down and save some power. So but they're never going to do it just because of a checklist. Because they're like, oh, geez, the competition's got four cores. It would be because they figured out some way, which they'd probably say on stage. It's like, here's why four cores are important. And then
deal about the iPad 2 having 9 times better graphics performance?
Right, right. They did graphics performance on top of processor performance.
That's what they're going to say. They're going to need, frankly.
And they will need
if they do a Retina display.
And there are ways to increase graphics performance without going to four cores. You can just simply beef up the graphics processor.
And as Jason points out, four cores isn't necessarily 4 times faster. You have to thread everything.
Right.
Developers have to go along for the ride. The iPad, despite its tag as a multitasking device, really isn't a multitasking device. You pretty much do one thing at a time. So more cores isn't necessarily going to make a big difference.
Only when you chop up those jobs into little pieces that you can feed into separate cores.
And that's up to the app developers.
Mostly
app. You can really see that. Like if you're looking at something like compressor, when you effectively cut those cores up, which is using QMaster and so on and so forth.
But it's designed to do that.
I know, but I'm saying when you see an app that's designed to do it, it completely changes the speed at which you're working. So it's worth it, but it does take very specific. Like compressor by itself doesn't natively take full advantage of all the cores on your computer. You have to build a QMaster.
Yeah.
If
you export out a QuickTime player, that's why it seems so interminable, is that it tends to use one core. And it means you can export four things in the same time as one, but you can't export one thing four times
as fast. Good luck doing that on an iPad, because it just isn't going to support it.
Well, an iPad is fundamentally sort of one thing that's running in the foreground. So
that's the argument against that. Increase the you got more transistors, put it into the GPU. That's where you... Now... of course, one of the other big announcements at Mobile World Congress was Photoshop Touch, Photoshop for the iPad.
For the iPad. Yeah. It was already on Android, I think, but nobody knew.
Well, there's Photoshop Express on both platforms. This is supposed to be more Photoshop than anything else.
I spent some good quality time with it last night.
Is it available already?
It's available.
Yep.
I downloaded it.
Came
I played with
Sunday,
it. I actually had some requests. People wanted to make sure I did this before Mac.
It came out during the Oscars.
I don't want to steal your pick. Is this going to be your pick later?
It is. It is.
So we don't have to go into great detail. We'll let you do a full review. I guess one question would be really interesting to see if it handled multiple cores. How well it did four cores. Because that's the kind of program you need. You're doing a Gaussian blur. If it can thread it to four cores, you're going to make a big difference in performance.
And its current structure, what I can say is it just does about everything as fast as you're moving.
I mean, that's pretty
scary. I didn't see any.
Is it iPad 2 only?
I don't know. I was trying to do smart selections with it. It's more of a version of Photoshop Photoshop Express. Photoshop Elements, I'm sorry, than the real Photoshop. So a lot of the cool features where you get to extract something from its background are the highlight features. So I was trying to use that last night, as a matter of fact, with this very picture. And if you do a very rough selection using that tool, it kind of keeps up with you. When you're trying to refine it, though, even on the iPad 2, it kind of was keeping up, but not really. And it got a little bit annoying to use. And I already felt myself trying to think that are there other ways I can achieve this effect that don't involve me having to use this feature that is frustrating me just a little tiny bit.
And speaking of multi-core, this is an iPad 2 only app. And I think one of the reasons is probably that's the dual-core processor that's in that iPad 2. So.
Well, I think if this is any measure, and I admit it's purely anecdotal and it's a small sample size, but Brant Hogg in our chat room says, I'm going to have to stop watching this show. I might have to buy an iPad now. So I think Apple's making the right moves, and so is Adobe. Shareholders meeting last week. The only big story is no dividend. There was some thought with $100 billion in cash.
Shocking.
You might want to give some of that.
Shocking.
They don't want to drain the executive pool down to the 8-foot cash level. They want to keep it at the 12-foot cash level so they can still use the high dive board when they dive.
I love this picture from the shareholders meeting. Fast asleep.
What I just find Tim Cook to be so diplomatic about this whole thing. Like, just be patient. We're really, really thinking about it. Is a nice way of saying we're not going to do anything about it, which is what I would say. If, of course, if I was CEO of Apple, I would say, if you don't think that the returns that you're getting from Apple stock is worth it, you should go invest somewhere else.
It hasn't exactly put a damper on the price, has it?
I mean, you know, just like, you know, if you don't think that we're returning, we are the largest company in the world giving you the returns of a small upstart. You know, as far as your stock value, you know, screw you. You know, like that would be pretty much my...
Well,
he does send
the message that they're being responsible about
it.
Which is always
about
the question. It's like, people are like, what's Apple doing? They don't ever say. And so now they've got this new message, which is, look, we're always thinking about it. We're not just...
I don't know if
always
is the right word, but he says,
"We just count it all day long."
I'd be the first to admit we have more cash than we need to run the daily business. So we're actively discussing a dividend. I can only ask for a bit of patience so we can do it in a way that's best for the shareholders. On cash, we've been thinking about cash very deeply. The board has been looking into what is in shareholders' best interest. My message is the board and the management team are thinking about this very deeply, and we will do what we think is in the best interest of the shareholders. I mean, of course. that's a non-admission. It's just
exactly.
Like,
it's just
you
like
know,
we're not going to do anything.
We'll do it. I mean, we'll do what's right for you.
I think the thing is as an I'm not an Apple shareholder, partially because of the show. I think that allowing Apple to make sure that it has the freedom to do anything that it needs to do, you know, in its business, which means we're tired of dealing with AT&T. We want to build our own network, or we want to run Wi-Fi into 20 cities and build a mesh grid to support our devices, or we want to, you know, do those kind of, I'm not saying that they're going to do those things, but right now they could, like, for instance, if they decided they really wanted all the technology that Adobe has, you know, Adobe's market cap is I think what, $16 billion, like. They make that
they could
every
buy
quarter.
Adobe, yeah.
I mean, you know, yeah. Like, you know, that wouldn't.
Just to add it for disclosure purposes, you don't own Apple stock. Mm-hmm. I don't own Apple stock. I'm sure you don't own
Not
Apple
allowed.
Stock. Andy, yeah. Allowed to? Do you have any Apple stock? No.
Nope. Yeah.
All right. So just so you know, we got rid of Scott Bourne. He had more Apple stock than all of us combined. Actually, you know, Scott, to his credit, sold his Apple stock.
Right.
Entirely when he started doing this show or shortly thereafter. So.
And reminded us of it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
How much
it
money
cost
he lost.
Me. It
yeah,
cost
yeah, exactly.
me. It cost me. Now, there were. I don't know what it is with the New York Times and Apple. It seems like a bad breakup. Is that a fair description? The Times has become a cheerleader for the Apple can't possibly to get any. You know, they're the ones who published the piece on Apple's factories. Now there are two articles in the New York Times. One from in the Common Sense column in Business Day. This is written by James B. Stewart. Saying, confronting the law of limits, Apple can't get any bigger. And another saying, this is an actual article from Kevin O'Brien, Apple's lead in smartphones not guaranteed. Is the Times doing its fiduciary responsibility and warning shareholders, hey, this isn't going to continue forever? We've heard that before, though, haven't we? I mean, when Apple was at $200, couldn't possibly. When it was at $300, couldn't get. $400, couldn't get.
Sell.
It's now over 500, or is it still to go back down?
There's a really nice takedown piece about the law of large numbers piece by a guy who goes by the nom de plume of Dr. Drang, who basically says that the guy who wrote that article doesn't know what the law of large numbers is. It has to do with averaging over time. And the money quote from him is, if it worked the way that writer says it works, you would keep measuring how tall Dirk Nowitzki was, and eventually he'd be 5'9". So, you know, there's points in there that are true, that Apple is so large that if you're looking for massive growth, it's sort of like that piece that said that Facebook's growth can't go on forever because they'll run out of people on planet Earth. It's true as far as it goes, but it's not what you think it is.
Well, I think that the other issue
And Apple's been very clear that there's a large portion of planet Earth is next, and that's China, with their big, one of the big five features in Mountain Lion is Chinese localization.
Yeah.
That's kind of saying, hey, we know we're running out of Westerners, but there's a billion Chinese.
And 85% of the phone market still doesn't have a smartphone or whatever it is, 80%.
We're not to the limits yet.
And that's also assuming that Apple stays in just the phone market, which is, you know, that there's no reason why, you know, they're already threatening to go into the TV market. And then there's other markets. And they, you know, the at the size and with the cash that they have, they can do a lot. They can go into a lot of markets very, very slowly. You know, like as one – gets eaten up, they can slowly move towards another one.
So I even though his name is Dr. Drang and the name of the blog is leancrew.com, I still got to give him a little bit of credit for correcting the James B. Stewart article. And I love this last paragraph. He says, "And that, Mr. Stewart, is how you do erudite. Leave the Bernoullis alone. Stick with what you do best, transcribing your credulous interviews with analysts."
Ouch.
You know, ow, you know, like the one near the end of the article with the analyst who thinks Microsoft is the company that best understands cloud computing.
Zing.
Ooh. Ooh.
Suddenly turned into an episode of America's Next Top Model for some reason. They just got a smackdown from Tyra.
Boom. Yeah. Dr. Drang says, "You're full of it, New York Times." Mm-hmm. You do have to wonder, I mean, why is the New York Times all of a sudden, it's like, what happened?
The rumor is, isn't it the rumor that after they ran the work, the Foxconn one, that no one at Apple will return their calls?
Right. David Polk did get a briefing a week early on Mountain Lion, despite some discussion.
But and Apple has personal relationships, right? I mean, Stephen Levy got briefings after he left Newsweek to go to Wired, and he still got briefed. They didn't transfer Levy to somebody else at Newsweek,
right?
Like
Dan Lyons.
That didn't happen. So David Pogue, you know, obviously is on Apple's list, and they'd like to talk to him.
And I'm glad of that, because it means that Andy Iannocco may or may not get an invitation, even though Apple hates me. That's good that they don't assign it to the organization; they assign it to individuals. I far prefer that, so that we can at least continue to cover stuff through proxy, via proxy.
Even though none of us can actually go, not that we're
bitter. That's fine. I don't care.
But I kind of like going to Petaluma.
Did you ever get invitations?
I got one through you.
Okay, that's right.
Oh no, and I got
the
couple.
Hi-Fi.
I will say
the iPod sucks.
I've had a couple. I've had a couple to like WWDC and stuff like that. Yeah, the Hi-Fi.
You know, Apple's number one. They're like literally number one in every single category now. So if you're the New York Times or a newspaper or magazine,
you shoot at them.
This is right. It's like their editors having meetings, saying, "Okay, Apple's not so big. You know, let's knock them down a few pegs and ask questions about this, because we got to challenge this," which I think is healthy on one level, to say, you know, just because there's been skepticism about Apple all along, now that Apple keeps getting larger, somebody should probably say, is this going to continue or not?
Right.
Now, you know, you can do that without getting the law of large numbers wrong. Right?
And the iEconomy pieces were, I think, appropriate. In fact, Mike Daisy, I don't think we talked about it last week. Mike Daisy was the guy who started the whole thing, because he got an iPhone with pictures of the workers. He wrote some articles about Foxconn, got a lot of press going.
He has a monologue.
Daisy goes to Apple or something. I can't remember.
And I think Agony and Ecstasy of Steve Jobs,
I think
is the name.
Yeah.
Catchy title.
Yeah.
And I think that these articles have benefited
Let me finish this thought. There was, remember, ABC Nightline got Foxconn factory access, and now there's a debate over whether, and it's pretty clear, they got a packaged Foxconn piece. You know, ABC is owned by Disney, if I'm not mistaken, still.
Yes.
And I have a feeling that I read an article by Mike in which he lambastes the people who believe that the ABC story was credible, and says this is no evidence whatsoever, and you know, Apple's doing a PR job on here. So those all of which I say is those iEconomy pieces are probably well justified.
Oh, I think that they're well justified, and I think that it's good for companies to
good for Apple.
It's good for Apple. I think it's good for the workers. I think it's good for the industry to be paying attention to what's going on.
Well, and as somebody pointed out, whether you believe in what Apple's done or not, they're the first company and the only company that makes stuff at Foxconn to step forward and say, well, let's do something about it.
Right. I mean, if I have a complaint about the way this coverage has been handled, again, it comes back to Apple riding high and being number one, is that this is, you know, Foxconn manufactures stuff for all the major technology manufacturers. So Apple, I think what Apple is bothered by is this perception that it's Apple who does this and nobody else does, when in fact, Apple is sort of getting singled out, and in some ways has a better track record, and seems like what they did with the Greenpeace stuff and the environmental issues, is trying to turn it around and be a leader after not being, and trying to just not say anything. They can't not say anything now. And in the end, I think that will be beneficial for everybody.
Yeah.
And when you have the visibility that Apple has, and when you have the clear margins that Apple has, you're going to invite these. Like, if you're making so much money per every unit, why is it not?
Well, it's interesting, because the Wall Street Journal seems to have picked Google as its bete noire as it's and now the time seems to pick Apple, and I don't know why, it just kind of looks that way. Here's the article: Apple's lead in smartphones not guaranteed. That's kind of
nothing is guaranteed. In a
meaningless statement, of course. But I guess the point is at mobile and Kevin J. O'Brien's
Android had the lead.
Yeah, I think it just switched in the fall. I mean,
it
yeah,
goes back
exactly.
and forth. But the point really is that if you go to Barcelona and you go to Mobile World Congress, you're going to see a lot of very competitive, very powerful, very interesting phones from the 41 megapixel Nokia phone
right.
to the new HTC One, which is a very impressive Android phone.
And Apple's not there, right?
And Apple's not there.
So that's the downside of Apple bypassing events like that, is that it makes that story all about everybody who's trying to fight Apple.
Right.
Of course, they do release their Apple's
invitation.
Always there, but not there. They don't go to CES, but they do announcements.
There.
You know, during the
So Eric Schmidt takes the stage in Barcelona for Mobile World Congress, and
everybody's
within 2 minutes, Apple has sent out their press invitation for their
at
event.
At the same time, you think that was intentional?
Oh, what are the chances that they...
See, because tomorrow...
that was time. Well,
I predicted, and I was wrong, but I predicted Apple would do it tomorrow
right.
when Steve Ballmer takes the stage and to talk about Windows 8. So you can actually, if you want to read more tea leaves...
More criminology,
we see who's more of a threat. Apple's much more worried about Google than they are about Microsoft.
I'm not even sure if Apple's paying attention to Microsoft anymore.
I don't think they care about anybody, to be honest with you, and I think they just release it when they release it.
I agree.
Tim Cook said Apple sold 37 million iPhones, 17 million more than it ever sold in a quarter. That's in the fourth quarter. He said, that's pretty good, but as I see it, 37 million for the last quarter represented 24% of the smartphone market. So 3 out of 4 people bought something else, and basically saying, we want them.
Exactly.
We want them too. So look, one thing we can all agree on, competition is great. And Apple's getting some competition. That's fine, but Apple's not going to sit back on its laurels. They're going to compete. And did Samsung announce its Galaxy 3?
No.
So that's one.
It's been rumored. Yeah.
Hey, hi, Ayaz. Ayaz, next time we get a shot of Eileen, would you do me this? Would you look at the camera, act surprised, then duck under the desk? Not you, Eileen. We've got to stage this, you know. So
okay,
next
here
time,
we go. Here we go.
Okay,
ready?
Eileen, what about the Galaxy 3? Did Apple, did Samsung say anything about that?
No.
well done, sir. That's
staged.
Our attempt
fake.
To go viral.
Totally fake.
Don't say the word S word. So the bottom line on this New York Times article is that Apple is not represented at Mobile World Congress, but is certainly going to put up a fight and is not giving up. Apple is focused on defending the high end of the market, but there is a low end, and the low end may well be taken by somebody like Nokia.
And then that's why we see the 3GS still out there from Apple,
right.
is that they want to in there too. But I went last year to Mobile World Congress, Barcelona, great town.
Oh, I
really
go.
Love it. It's much harder to not go now that I've been there once.
We made a mistake not going.
Because it's so awesome. But you know, it's weird because Apple, nobody wants to say the name. It's
right.
like, speak his name and he will appear. So they all are like, well, unlike other products. And everybody tries to not talk about Apple, but everything is really about a response to Apple. It's kind of amazing.
Of course it is.
It's weird.
Yeah. It was even like that at CES. You know, it's Apple, it's great. They just cast a pall. over the entire tech industry. They're so dominant.
Yeah. It's like the ghost floating over the... Oh, what will we do next? Oh.
What do we call it? They who shall not be named?
Yeah.
Applemort.
Applemort.
That's good.
I like it. I like it.
Next
year, we are going to go to Mobile World Congress. We made a huge mistake. I was thinking about it, and Eileen was lobbying for it, and it turns out that this... Because... mobile is now the fastest, hottest growing segment in technology.
Yeah.
That's become like CES, or it's the show.
I think that is an excellent business decision, Leo. And by the
way, as a
sidebar, the beer is good. Manchego cheese is the best cheese ever.
Oh, Manchego's
and,
great.
And tapas.
And paella.
They have three different kinds of ham-flavored Pringles. I swear to God.
Jamón.
Yes.
Oh, man.
And you think it tastes like bacon, but they do have the bacon, but they have the parma flavor. They have the.
Yeah.
I would like to say that if you're looking for people, my wife spent a year in Barcelona and speaks fluent Spanish.
Catalan?
So she.
I think we'll send a team. I think we'll cover it like we
it's,
do.
Oh, no, it's a very serious business. Yes.
Yes.
Well, I love Barcelona too, but I think nevertheless, this has become. It's very clear this year. Look at the announcements, and frankly,
it's
you look
from
at the,
CES. CES they held back most of the phone companies at CES held back because they made their big announcements.
And you look at the announcements in the desktop and laptop market, and it's not, you know, well, they're going to be smaller, lighter. It's not. It's nothing much to say, right? But you look at tablets and phones, that's where everything's happening.
Yeah.
Also, I think 2013 is going to be really interesting because both Google and the hardware manufacturers are really going to have their act together to a degree they did not have it together this year or the year before. You're also going to see Microsoft presenting in force with, again, serious right. tablets that can really turn a few heads.
Yep.
I mean, last year was kind of sad because everybody was so optimistic because it's like they had to watch Apple make all the money the first year of the iPad, and then they're like, no, but look, we spent the last year building our wonderful, wonderful touchpad and our wonderful, wonderful playbook, and once we put our player on the field, oh boy, then you're going to see some real full contact football, and then cut to this wrecked body just being hauled off on a stretcher off the field.
And I like what's happening in the Android market. I'm very interested by this HTC One, this Note. I think that there's some, what's happening is Apple is towing the line and in a very linear way, improving.
That's what they do.
And that's what they do. They're one company after all. Although you look at Samsung, which is also one company, and they've got this size, 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 any size you want. You just pick one. They can't figure out what the
Apple has claimed the top of the bell curve.
Right.
And, right. That they've right, the got peak. The sweet spots. And right. So Samsung's really smart to say, we're going to spread it out. Yeah. It's like playing yeah. a little bit on the like roulette table or something. It's right. We're going to just right. play a lot of little bets and see what works.
Well, and I think that the other thing is that the personality of Apple users is they just want it to work. They don't want to have 18 different things to choose from. You know, they just want it to work.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I have an Android phone that I like to play with as well. So, you know, so the thing is, and I like some of the freedom that I get with that, and I like some of the extra pieces, and it ties into Google Plus better and that type of thing.
Regardless, yeah. It's very good to have competition.
Yeah.
I just think that Apple has to get some, maybe not, but I'd ask you guys, don't they get some input from what's going on out there and think about maybe different screen sizes or... Or do you think Apple is just so insular that they just say, nope, we're going to put on blinkers? We're
I not definitely look they're the absolutely stuff. Paying attention to what everybody else is doing, and then they slowly assimilate the things that they think are the best.
Well, notifications on iOS 5 is a very good example of taking right. the best of Android right. and saying, we could do that.
Apple's funny. I think that they do look at the competition, but they also have the separate driver, which is this internal driver of how can we make yes. this better and do things that are yes. different. Right. And they do a little bit of both, but I do think they pay attention. Sometimes I think if the Galaxy Note became a huge hit, they'd be like, all right, maybe we were wrong about that. But they've probably done that all that testing before and said, no, it doesn't really work. But
well, and there's been other articles. You go to CES and there's tons of Apple employees. I recognize some of them.
Oh, that's interesting.
Okay. They're just wandering through CES just looking at cool things.
They do not want you to know like they're there.
Oh, yeah. No, and they, you
the badge turned
they,
around.
They have the badge all turned around yeah. or blacked out. But there's some of them that I recognize, and so I know that they're there. And they're all wandering around just looking yeah. at cool stuff. Thinking about what they can do next.
It is part of the Apple mythos that it's all we think about. We're thinking of the Aristotelian perfection.
Yes, the ideal.
The ideal. So we don't care yeah. what others are doing.
But it does point out the strengths of the two phone companies. As phone companies, Apple's greatest product is the iPhone, and all the thought and all the planning they put into each model that they introduce, where everything has been deeply and profoundly considered top to bottom, inside and out. Whereas in the Android market, their biggest advantage is every other phone that's out there.
Right.
If there are people who are ridiculing the Note, it's... they would be properly ridiculing it if that was the only phone that was out there. But it's an indication that no matter what kind of phone you want, if you go for Android, you can probably find exactly the kind that you want. If you want one with a built-in Pico projector, Samsung makes a model of yeah. iPhone that has that Android phone that has a built-in.
Isn't
Pico
that wild?
Projector.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or a 41 megapixel camera from Nokia, which is running on Symbian.
Yeah, I mean, last year, the funny
creates a 5 megapixel image.
The funny running gag from last year's Mobile World Congress for me was, why are you putting 3D cameras in a phone? I mean, it's right. other than to spread pink eye amongst all the tech journalists who are demonstrating putting on those glasses and looking at the results. I mean, but it's not just gimmickry. There are people who just want a slide out keyboard, or they just want this one feature that Apple has no interest in, or they. It's not so much they need need a Retina display, but they do need something that's larger because they can't really operate what was used to be a standard size phone 2 years ago and is now kind of small. So people don't get emotionally invested in the operating system quite so much, I think, with phones as they do with when you have an iPad or a desktop.
They do get, I think, invested in the form factor, though. Yeah. I think that really the most a phone is the most personal computer, right? It's in your pocket. It's really personal. So I like the idea that you have choices. I think that's because it's so personal. And I think you I am heavily invested in the form factor of my phone. You know,
but I mean, I think they see it more as a practical and functional item.
Oh,
it's,
yes.
It's much more difficult.
It's not a toy.
It's much more difficult for them to think, oh, well, I'm buying into a wonderful ecosystem in which there's managed content, in which there's a cloud-based plan. It's like, no, does this have a slide-out keyboard? Nope. Next.
It's very practical. It's very practical. If your phone crashes in a phone call, you know, that's it. You're dead to me. So it becomes very practical. Absolutely. And I think that that's the case. What about an Apple TV? Where would Apple announce such a thing? Would they do that? They're not going to do that March 7th, clearly. The way that invitation is structured, it's clear that, you know, I thought maybe we'd see some other product announcements, but no, that's not going to happen, right?
Yeah. For the guy who was nitpicking about the nitpickers, if I had seen the movie app in that application doc, I would be thinking about, okay, we're going to see a 1080 Apple TV, or we might even see something that is more video specifically oriented about the announcement. So now I really don't know what else might be introduced outside of the iPad, because there's not even a nod to anything else.
Nope.
Well, do you want to share the stage with two? If you've got two great products, a brand new one that's going to change everything, and then a new iPad, which is the super hot product, why would you have them all be on one day?
If the product that you're selling is HD, and you're saying that we have the greatest and largest and deepest library of HD content that's purchasable and rentable on the internet, and we have the greatest mobile device for watching digital HD content, and the greatest living room device for doing HD content. So it's not out of the question.
It's possible. I think more likely that it's a third generation Apple TV, maybe than the groundbreaking Apple TV set.
I'd be shocked if there were an Apple TV. Were an Apple TV set, I would have expected there to be some sort of a nod to something else other than the iPad in the, because they love being cute like that. They are the masters of retroactively. We go back to the invitation saying,
something to see and something to touch.
They're taking things from the iPad and putting them into the Mac. It wasn't just turning our I get it now.
My understanding, I'm not sure if this is totally accurate, but my understanding talking to someone about it is the two times that you release a TV is the end of August and the end of October. One is for football and the other one is for Christmas.
Right.
That's when a vast majority of the purchases happen. So there's not really any reason to release a new TV in this period of time.
Actually, though,
as far as shipping goes,
with the fact that the Apple TV 2 seems to be drying up, and the fact that this is going to be a 1080 capable iPad, upgrading all the videos on iTunes or as many as possible to 1080, that's probably part of it too.
That would just be a side announcement.
Yeah.
As a result, everything is HD.
Sure. Yeah. Let's show you how great this looks.
Right.
You know.
Well, and that's what you need. You need apps and content that take advantage of a Retina display.
You know, I'm going to make a prediction that we're going to get that little lecture about how when you know 720 to 1080 doesn't seem that big, but when you count the pixels, it's actually the whole why 1080 is important, which it's never been up to now. But as soon as Apple gets 1080, it's going to be like, oh, but 1080 is huge.
Yep.
And the fact that it'll be almost impossible to distinguish a 720p from a 1080p stream on your iPad, just the size of it, it'll be almost impossible to know the difference.
Small. Yeah. And we will see somebody from Electronic Arts demonstrating a Retina display game of some kind.
Of course.
Madden in HD or something.
Let's keep those segments short, Apple.
Yeah.
They're always they always go too long.
And it will be Tim Cook, right? Tim Cook with a little visit from Scott Forstall's, Phil Schiller.
I think it's more Phil Schiller.
Yeah. Phil Schiller. Scott's desktop.
Maybe Tim comes on in the beginning and does a little.
Eddie Q. A little Eddie Q.
Just for the iTunes stuff, it's possible.
Yeah, yeah.
I just, my only request for Apple is the third party ones, just keep them short because they're always too long and slow.
I wish Johnny Ive would do.
Yeah, he'd be fun.
They have him in videos, and he does a good job in the videos.
Yeah. It may be that he needs to be in the videos. I mean, we may not know. He may lisp.
He may not like the spotlight.
He may like the spotlight. He just seems like he'd be so good.
Oh, well, also,
he's got an English accent, after all. I mean, really, that's really all you need for a presentation.
I think so.
Also, isn't that honestly part of the user interface? You don't, when you look, when you see Johnny Ive, you see him in video, and when you're watching the presentation, you know that, okay, I've seen this before. This is the part in which he's going to be talking about the design considerations and the hardware engineering behind this.
Right.
That was the other guy's job to talk about the esoteric and the marketing stuff that lets you buy content.
And Bill Gates on a screen talking about Office for the iPad. That'll be exciting.
I think Office for iPad's going to happen, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the perfect place
Maybe
for that.
Maybe that's
for
where
that
you announce
People
it.
Were like, why would Apple share the stage? It's like Microsoft coming on as a subplot in Apple's big announcement.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
I think Apple is happy because although that's good for Microsoft, it's great for Apple too to say, and even Microsoft Office is on the iPad.
I've been thinking about that ever since Office for the iPad became a touch more real over the past couple of weeks, that obviously it's in Microsoft's hugest best interest to make sure that there is a mobile-enabled version of Office, and that would be one of the greatest Office apps you can buy for any mobile device. So what happens if they decide to make this an opportunity to solidify Office across all boards, across all devices? What would happen to the Android tablet marketplace if there was a perfect for mobile, but still within that context, a perfect Office suite made by Microsoft that was 100% file compatible, that would run on every single Android tablet out there. Suddenly, a huge factor, a huge feature that people want a mobile computing for, that they want for a small computer that they travel with, that's been solved, and now there won't be an inherent advantage to getting an iPad for that specific job. So that could be more disruptive than maybe we're guessing.
That might be an argument for saying Apple will co-opt Microsoft, bring them on stage, say, hey, look, don't do anything for an Android, and we'll give you a little bit of pride of place. You know?
Yeah, like a reversal of what happened like in 97, where we'll have Tim Cook will be like the big
giant head.
Ballmer, say, we've invested $150 million in Microsoft with their agreement that we will be exclusive. Mobile for Office.
Boy, has the worm turned, huh?
Cross-license and patents. Why not? If you're Microsoft, why wouldn't you, for tablet Office, iPad would be first and Windows 8 would be second, right?
And who cares about Android?
Android tablets are not that relevant, especially for Microsoft. Yeah.
I agree with you, Andy. It could be a game changer, but I think if Apple makes it at all interesting for Microsoft,
are you guys still using Office?
They can turn their back on it.
It would screw over a lot of people.
Does anyone here use Office?
Lots of people do. I mean, working on the web, it's less relevant now, and so I do my writing in other text editors, but I still have them, and Excel, I still use some because there's some stuff that Excel is sort of best at, even though the charts aren't as pretty as numbers.
You know, so weird. I was thinking about the other day. iWork hasn't been updated since 2009.
No.
But
yes.
We saw
iWork 2009.
iWork on the Mac hasn't been updated, but the Mountain Lion demo included an updated version of Pages that does document in the cloud. So there is an update coming, whether they call it 12 or whether it's just an update to 09. I would imagine it'll be 12. But that was, it's real.
Wasn't there also a marginal update that added EPUB support, I think? I think that was past 2009.
Incremental stuff.
There have been updates, but it's still Office 09. I work 09.
The advantage of Microsoft Office, like real native Microsoft Office support, is that there is as yet no solution apart from doing VNC that will allow you to retain notes and revision changes and collaborative features on a document. I was talking to somebody who, of course, had a product that allows you to do 100% native Word files on an iPad. Who was citing as an example somebody who was talking to earlier, who two lawyers arguing about, oh, look, you're supposed to, you're this version of the contract doesn't reflect this, doesn't reflect that. And then after the 10 minutes into the call, says that, oh, are you reading this document on an iPad? Yeah. You see, if you had this on Windows, you would see that those three paragraphs had already been cut out. We've been arguing for 20 minutes on nothing. Which is a self-serving story to tell, but it is illustrative that there's so many situations in which you do need the real version of Office.
Right. And I mean, that's the point here, is that they can also tie it in with SkyDrive. They can tie it in with all the Microsoft stuff. So if you're a company that's relying on Office and you have iPads now, you know, now it makes sense. They can work together.
I think for us, it's a financial decision. Pages and Keynote. We don't really use Pages as much.
So now, by the way, instead of I bought iWork, in the bundle, and I still don't get credit for having it, so I have to buy $20 per. So I did actually buy the $20 Keynote in the App Store. But look at Pages 09, and it's version 4.1, so they've added Lion support, but it's 09.
Yeah, they haven't done the big step, and that's a question.
Yeah.
I guess my question, most of what I write is in
is in Keynote or text edit.
Well, yeah, but
so you know, it's you know that the but I'm
Office is no longer essential for super gigantic tech nerds, but there are lots of like
lots
us.
Of offices.
I'm including all the lots there are of offices lots of people out there.
No, I'm not saying there isn't. I'm just saying that like I look at a lot of little, smaller companies like us, and I'm just not willing to pay for it anymore. You know, that's the big thing is Office. I look at the price of Office, and I just go, I'm not going to pay for that anymore.
Although it's much cheaper than it used to be.
Yeah, I just hate Excel. I think that's the biggest thing. Yeah. Passion.
Our business office. Our business office. It's why I would. We'll use nothing less.
The scale here. If you want to scale, then Excel makes a lot of sense. So if you need to do big financials, but a lot of people use Excel to organize their projects, and that is crazy. I'm just telling you.
Terrible.
Keynote runs when it comes to organizing your project and organizing even small budgets. Numbers is just amazing to do that. You know.
Let's take a break. We're going to talk more about. We got to get some Mac news in here.
Yeah, mountain lion.
Mountain lion. Okay, good.
That's not really a mountain lion, is it?
It's mountain kitty. That's a mountain lion. Actually, you know, mountain lions aren't that big. They're kind of like little, they're like in between lions and kitties.
They're still pretty big.
They're vicious, though.
They're big. They're the largest small cat, but they're big.
They're the largest small cat.
Yeah, they're related to the house cat.
And feisty.
But they're really big.
We have them. If you want to visit, we have them up in the hills.
They'll eat you.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Watch out!
I saw that. My wife used to make fun of me because when we go into the one of the national parks around here, I won't go in without a knife. I mean, I grew up in the country.
We have a lot of mountain lions.
And
here.
They showed that thing where the kid got attacked and his father pulled out a knife and stabbed the mountain lion. And I looked at my wife. I was like, "See, that's why."
Or a noisemaker, just a noisemaker, something to scare him away. Just you know,
I prefer a 6-inch or larger blade.
I don't think I want to get that close. I would like them to run
away. I prefer not to get that close. But.
So go, hey, hi, Matt Lyon, hey.
You know, no, it's even better, Leo.
Ukulele? Like
a dinner gong. No, a dinner gong.
Bong,
bong. Exactly.
that draws
also,
them,
they're
actually.
They're scared by the smell of steak sauce, too, so use that as an exfoliant. and stay 20 yards ahead of me at all times.
That's a big mountain lion. We don't have the big ones like that.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
a really
do.
Big one.
We do. See? That's what they are.
That's what they are.
You're thinking of like a bobcat or something. Yeah. Mountain lions are big.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I thought they were more like little things.
No, I think you're thinking like bobcats.
I must be thinking of bobcats.
No, they're big. They will eat you.
Well, and I know they'll eat you. We have that problem here.
They were largely extinct where I grew up in Western Pennsylvania, but everything, the Nittany lions, the pit panthers, and old guys that would tell you that when they took the meat into market, they had to do it during the day because in the evening the mountain lions would jump down and start eating.
Google search is good if you want to find mountain lion pictures, apparently.
Oh, that's a nice one.
Yeah,
he looks like it.
That's a pretty kitty.
Cougar
he
is looks, a mountain lion.
Should, yeah, they should have used that instead of the...
The mountain lion is not amused.
Yeah.
Picture that Apple uses.
I really didn't like that
one. It's kind of a pissed off mountain lion.
Yeah, it looks like I'm going to eat. That would have been better.
See, there we go.
Little kitty mountain lion.
If
you raised a mountain lion from pups, would they then be nice cat in the house?
No.
Okay, just checking.
My cat has tried to kill me numerous times, but he's so small that he's failed.
Yeah, cats being nice is just relative size to you. Yeah. You know, as they increase, none of them are nice. It's just that as they increase in the relative size, they become more fussy.
Once they're big enough to eat you, they will.
They just like, you know, I'm tired of you now.
Break your neck.
I kind of sense that, actually, from all even the little kitties.
The little cats are like, I would kill you, but you're too big.
They're tolerating us because we're big. Okay.
Is Holstein being stalked by a mountain lion?
A Holstein being stalked by a mountain lion. That's scary.
Yes, it was.
Did you just do that in iPad Photoshop?
No. There's an inn in Colorado that serves. They specialize in serving the last two breeding pair of every living creature on Earth, and they have a giant. They have a stuffed mountain lion like in the lobby, and you do.
Now you know where
It looks like she's stuffed and posed as though she's been well fed and is disinterested in moving from that branch. But there you can't as you're getting your coat and your hat.
You get where
you
it's
have to
really
look at that
going
paw
on.
And realize that. Okay, she would have like my entire throat between two of those claws and would be looking at it almost unaware that she has just ended my life with it. Okay.
And by the way,
this creature in the future.
This is why we've never been able to do this show in under 2 hours. Just I'm pointing it out now.
Someday the Twit Network will be so massive and so powerful they can afford to say, how about we edit out the 58 minutes of stuff that have nothing to do with technology?
Because people would get mad at us if we did that. Hey, this show brought to you by Ford, those great folks at Ford who make the amazing 21st century vehicles we've come to love. like my 2010 Mustang. Now, the Mustang, of course, is a muscle car. It's got a big V8 engine, and, you know, it really, I get like, I think, 18 miles to the gallon. And I should have, now in hindsight, as gas prices go up, perhaps considered something like the Taurus SHO with its EcoBoost engine. See, Ford, they're thinking ahead. They understand emissions controls, fuel prices. They've got to make cars that give you that feeling, that power, that torque, but also are very economical. And that's where the EcoBoost comes in. Really an amazing technology. You can find out more about it if you go to Ford.com/technology. Of course, they reduce the number of cylinders. They've got six cylinder EcoBoost in the SHO. And now they're doing four cylinder engines, 2 liters and 1.6 liter EcoBoost engines that compensate for the loss in horsepower and torque with a smaller engine through a combination of technologies, including direct injection and turbocharging. Now, I know you guys know cars, so I read these. I don't know what I'm talking about, but you correct me if I say something wrong here. The direct injection, it says here, produces a... What are you laughing at?
I don't know anything about cars.
I don't know anything about cars.
What? I thought you guys... You seem so manly.
I've driven a car.
You guys seem manly.
I drive a car. I drive a 1994 Honda Civic, Leo.
Oh, we got to work on
for
you.
For Pete's sake.
We got to work on you.
I know nothing about modern cars.
I have plenty of experience with cars. I know that the railing of the staircase is the best place to put the orange track. You want to get the car through the loop and shoot all the way across out to the airport.
Okay, so you probably don't have an EcoBoost in that Hot Wheel.
I should have my own show on the Twit Network about cars.
So, I found that Heartbeat City was the best cars out there.
Here's the deal. Yes, direct injection produces a cooler, denser charge that generates more power per drop of fuel. And then the two small engine-cooled turbochargers spool up more quickly than a single large turbo.
Large tuber.
Tuber.
Are you saying this is a turbocharger? Potato-driven car?
So this is what has been explained to me. The idea of the turbocharger is that, of course, you're using energy from the exhaust, which is otherwise wasted, to spin those turbine wheels. They compress the incoming air, mm-hmm. which increases the output for liter of displacement. So you get a more powerful engine without the turbocharger line, because instead of using a big wheel, which stands to reason spins up more slowly, they use two smaller turbines. It really is. It's an example.
That's technology.
It's an example of how Ford's really thinking about engines to make the best possible vehicle for your needs. Of course, they've got electric, all electric. They've got hybrid electric. They've got plug-in hybrid. They're really doing some amazing stuff.
I hear it's all about ball bearings.
Don't know.
Wouldn't know. I think that's related to the process.
No idea. But better ball bearings through chemistry. My suggestion is that you not listen to me, but you go to Ford.com/technology and actually read something, you know, accurate and useful. Or, you know, the proof is in the pudding. Go test drive the 2012 Explorer and Edge, which have the leading best-in-class highway fuel economy for the category. The Explorer has 28 highway miles per gallon, according to the EPA, with its 2.0-liter EcoBoost engine. And that is best-in-class in large utilities. 28 highway miles to the gallon.
You know, Frederick has an Edge.
Big car.
I am so jealous.
Does he love his Edge?
He loves it.
That's the high-tech one. Boy, that's an amazing
car. And he got it loaded, and it's just, like, he gets near it in the back hatchback.
Yeah, what wakes up and says, hello. Come on, yeah. It's the 2013 awesome. Escape coming in just a month will offer both 1.6 and 2.0-liter EcoBoost engines. So drive one of those at a Ford dealer near you. You will see what we're talking about. Moving along, singing a song. Apple explains iCloud in a new video. It is not easy to explain the cloud.
Turns out they didn't even try to explain it. They just showed you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a classic show over tell.
Show over tell. Is like, that
you know,
what
they
that's
say
called
show,
in the business?
Instead of show don't tell.
Let me see if I can pull this up here from the YouTube.
Doesn't it kind of sound as though they made a mistake in trying to make it into its own, to promote it as though it's its own product and its own sort of service, as opposed to simply over the next 2 years when they say, oh, we have this new thing called Documents in the Cloud, muttering your breath, oh, it's powered by iCloud. Oh, we have this new thing, it's called iTunes Everywhere. Oh, it's powered by iCloud.
Yeah.
Show me the things I'm doing with it.
I don't think anybody looking at this is going to have any idea what the hell they're, what is this?
Nobody is ever going to use iCloud. They're going to use the features that iCloud powers. So that's why I think it was sort of a mistake to put that so front and center.
Yeah, they're kind of walking it back now, I think, a little bit and saying it's really about what it does and not about, you know, not it's not a thing. It's just part of everything else.
Maybe
it's,
to this point, Apple acquired Chomp, which was a great app recommendation engine on the iOS platform, and now they got the Chompers working for them.
It's so hard to find apps that, I mean, this is obviously a big issue.
Did you use Chomp? Was that a?
I haven't used it.
I installed it, and neither the Genius nor Chomp did much for me. Like it, what you want is it? The idea is it looks at everything you've got, and then this is what you would like.
So the big difference now is when Apple buys companies like this, they often do it because there's some underlying technology, and there are also some really talented people.
I think they got the people.
And like with Lala, right? They didn't bring Lala inside, but they took the people and the knowledge.
Right.
And the difference between Chomp and what they can do inside Apple is that inside Apple they have all the data, right? They have everything that Apple knows about it. And on the outside, they have to guess and they have to look at iTunes and they have to ask their customers to share data. On the inside, they'll have all that Genius data about apps. They'll have all the app buying, purchase, you know, information that Apple stores. And so the data will be much richer. Plus, they'll have these smart people who've thought about this. So for me, the good news is Apple is saying, yes, we need to upgrade
understand the problem. 9to5 Mac says there's going to be, maybe Macworld also, that there's an iTunes revamp in the works, an App Store overhaul. The new design is said to be even simpler and more user-friendly than the current design. Apple is working on ways to enhance and speed the efficiency of finding new content like songs, videos, and applications. Interactivity is a cornerstone in the new iTunes store.
iTunes does feel a little bit old, doesn't it? I mean,
painful.
Well, the app is painful, but even
horrible.
The iTunes store.
But it was painful a long time ago.
The iTunes store experience is also pretty long in the tooth.
Yeah.
Not only that, but there's so many little gaps where you want to do something very simple when you're recommending an app to somebody, but then you realize that, I can't check the price of this because of the situation, the situation I'm in this particular pain of the app, or you want to save something for later, and it's not obvious that you have sort of a wish list. You have to really reveal it through a pop-up.
Apple and EMI announced Wednesday that you can buy Beatles ringtones for a mere $1.99.
$29.
Are you running out to get one?
No.
Ringtones.
This is so 90s, selling ringtones.
I think we're seeing the...
Can't you just take a Beatles song and make a ringtone?
Yeah, you can.
Okay.
Yeah. This is the specifics of that deal that Apple signed, that exclusive deal. And it must have included, you'll market our music for a couple of years, and we'll do ringtones.
Can you take a DRM'd song into GarageBand and build a ringtone and then export it back out?
I don't think with DRM, but it doesn't matter because there's no DRM.
Oh, there's no DRM on that. Yeah, never mind.
Yeah, so you just drag it in.
You take it into GarageBand, and GarageBand actually has like a ringtone export, right?
Yeah, you set a loop under like 25 seconds and do export ringtone, and it comes out as an M4R.
That's the point, is you don't need to do any of that.
Yeah.
Actually, I used Macworld, has the best article on how to use Match. With all the details of like the messing around with it. And I realized I wasn't able to sync a lot of my music to my other phone, my Android phones, because they were DRM'd.
Right.
And so
that was my article.
You guys told me how to do it. I deleted all my songs. First I matched.
Yeah, you make a smart playlist that says only show those songs that have been matched or purchased. They're basically recognized by iTunes in the cloud, iTunes Match. And then you can actually delete them, and it's super scary,
It's very scary.
And you tell them to move them to the trash, but they're still in the trash if there's a problem.
That's what I did.
And they all get grayed out. And then you select them all and say download, and it re-downloads them.
By the next day, I had 256 AAC unprotected files.
And they don't expire. There was some confusion about that. It's like when I unsubscribe from iTunes Match, do they expire? They don't. They just...
You're paying that $25 a year for the streaming.
For the syncing service,
The syncing. That was just great to take all that DRM off of, because I had purchased a lot of stuff in the iTunes store.
Any music that was a bad CD rip or that was a 128 MP3 or something, it's all like I had a list of things I had been meaning to re-rip and that I just never gotten to. And they all just work now. I never have to go back to the CD.
I had some sub-96 kilobit stuff. And I used, I think it was your tip to, we talked about this last time you were on.
Right,
to convert them to 128 AAC.
They still sound terrible, but now they say they're a higher bit rate.
And then they download the new ones.
And then it works.
Oh, they have to be 128 for it to download
the
new ones?
They have to be above 96.
So I had a lot. I don't know why. I probably got it from Napster.
Napster.
Yeah, years ago.
It's the great Napster amnesty.
The great Napster. And by the way, I think that they sent a $10,000 check to the record companies for a match, so...
Well, to that little independent one too. I thought that the terms were more like hundreds of millions of dollars
for the
record companies was kind of the payoff. Like, here's the deal. We're going to set this all up so that everyone doesn't have to think about this anymore. We'll pay you hundreds of millions of dollars to do that. And we can do that because we have $100 billion in the bank and we're not really going to notice it.
On Saturday, I got a phone.
The record company had a really great point. It wasn't that it was a windfall of money. It was that here is $10,000 of absolutely free money that we would not have gotten in any other way, shape, or form. So, yes, we're glad to simply have $20,000 more than we would have had otherwise.
We're very happy. Thank you, Apple. So I got a real good reason to read my emails in the future. Apparently, a guy named Matt Spaccarelli, like 2 months ago, told me that he had filed in small claims court in Ventura County to try to recover some money from AT&T because AT&T, after using a mere gig and a half of bandwidth watching Netflix, AT&T had throttled him. And I just, you know, I get so much email, I missed it.
Right.
Then he sent me another one saying, tomorrow I'm going to be in court. Missed that. So he called me on Saturday, said, oh, by the way, I won $850. The judge, Matt told us a story and it's great. It's on the Tech Guy. In fact, I should pull it off the Tech Guy and play it at some point. It's on the Tech Guy show from Saturday. But, the judge said, hey, small claims court is where justice happens in America. It is where the rubber meets the road. And you are absolutely right, sir, that, AT&T, by promising you unlimited data, he was grandfathered in, isn't giving it to you when they throttle you. Especially since people on limited plans don't see those restrictions. So I'm giving you $850. AT&T said they may appeal.
They better appeal. You know, I'm hoping that he keeps the money, and I'm hoping that it goes a little higher. But the thing is, if they don't appeal and enough of us decided we wanted to do something about that, it would just drive AT&T into the ground. I mean, they can't do a class action suit. You can't do it with the contract. But if everyone started showing up in small claims court that has these unlimited, not everyone, 0.1%. AT&T's couldn't manage the legal load.
Now, don't show this email because it's got his email address and his phone number, and I don't want people bugging Matt. But he says, Leo, it was cool to be on your show. Thanks for taking my call. I just want you to know my brother is going through the same throttling issue I am. On Monday, I'm going to file his case in the L.A. County Small Claims Court and see if I can make it two for two.
Matt is not – I'm not a lawyer, but I play one in Small Claims Court.
Are we going to start seeing this like those commercials like on basic cable?
I'm Matt Spaccarelli.
Have you been throttled? Come to the heavy hitters.
Maybe you remember me from beating AT&T last week.
He can't say he's your lawyer, but he can say he's your legal consultant.
Right, because you don't use lawyers in Small Claims Court.
Right, so he could take 10%. You know, Matt, this is a whole business model here. You could just be doing this every day. You could be showing up in small.
He told me he watches Mac Break Weekly. So Matt, hi and well done. AT&T, according to Jason's Macworld magazine, says they will appeal. I think it's a kind of
they have to. I mean, once it starts to become precedent. I mean, because if he's smart, he's going to say there's a precedent for this already, and blah 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 blah.
Well, it's not. It's a precedent. And this we were kind of talking about this. It's apparently a precedent only in that jurisdiction. It's a small claims ruling. So it doesn't have a national precedent. It does have a national PR result. And you're right. There will be others who will attempt to do the same as a result.
Even though it's not a legal – you know, it's not a precedent that's binding, the more times you're winning, the more times you're likely to win. I mean, that's the –
And the more people will come out of the woodwork and do it right. In their small claims court too.
It's exactly. Interesting to see Sprint using the iPhone really make the push, the case for we are truly – we're the only unlimited plan. It is an opportunity for a company like Sprint, which is essentially an also-ran at this point, to distinguish themselves against AT&T and Verizon, which also – I don't know if Verizon is throttling, but they don't have unlimited
plans. I have
an
unlimited plan with Sprint. And the only thing I don't understand is that every time I pick up my Galaxy, when I'm not in this area, I get a roaming warning. And I don't know whether that is actually the case or not.
I hope that's not the case.
It constantly is saying
– I don't have that. Roaming. I don't have that.
Weird.
I think that's something going on. I have a Sprint Galaxy, which I love.
And I love the Galaxy. I just don't use it because I go somewhere else and I get these roaming warnings. So if someone knows why I'm getting those.
What do you think about this article from Ars Technica, Timothy B. Lee? If Android is a stolen product, and that's, of course, what Apple asserts and Steve Jobs asserted so eloquently, then so was the iPhone.
It's a more inflammatory headline than the actual article. Actual story.
Yeah.
And I don't make the mistake I did. Ars Technica's design makes it it's a 2-page article, and it's very hard to tell. It ends sort of with like this snide comment, and that's page one. And if you only read page one, you'll think, boy, this guy's kind of a jerk, because it's detailing all the different aspects of the iPhone that came before it.
Multi-touch.
Even though Apple was the first company to put them all together
right.
in a product, which is not a small thing. It's a huge thing. Page two... He's much more sort of fair. That's the second act of this story. And his point is, look, there's a lot of back and forth now. And although it's true that I think that Android knocked off the iPhone and Apple did a lot of synthesis of a lot of different stuff and made a product. And then you look at the Android designs before iPhone and after.
Compared G1, which is Google's first phone, which was terrible.
Yeah, it's shocking.
And it came out, it's just a few months after the first iPhone came out. And then subsequent phones from Samsung, which look pretty much the same as an iPhone.
Right.
It's clear they were influenced. Right. But he makes the point that
now we go back and forth.
It's vice versa as well. As I mentioned, the notification system's now available in iOS 5 is identical to that in the Android phone.
Yes.
And that's what users want. It's what happened with Windows and Mac OS. There's a back and forth. And we got the recycle bin on Windows because Apple created the trash can on System 7. And that's a good thing for everybody in the long run.
And I think you can overemphasize the fact that I do think, you know, Android as we know it would not exist without the iPhone having come into being. And
but
we can
no smartphone would, right? I mean,
right. No,
Windows
not,
Mobile
no,
wouldn't either.
No modern smartphone would.
Right.
That all said, it's not as if everything that Google's done with Android has been copying Apple.
Right.
There's been some copying, and there's also been some advancement. And then Apple has taken some stuff that Google has done because, you know, what's Apple going to do? Their notifications were bad. So they made a better notification center, and I think Google got that right. So the Apple's notification looks like Google's to a certain extent. Google's got those widgets on the home screen that Apple still doesn't have.
I love the widgets. There's, I like the back button. I know nobody else likes that, but I actually
like
the back button
at all. But,
my problem is I have to, on the iPhone, always back up all the way. And the back button lets you back up incrementally.
Right. That's the problem with the Android back button is you never, or the Windows Windows Phone back button, you never know quite where you're going to go.
Right.
That's the problem. It's what will happen?
Right. If you want to discuss one thing that really, so the difference between attention to detail, why would Google choose to make a back button that really looks like a reload button? There are times when there are three different versions of this loop-de-loop arrow button on the screen, and I don't know which one will take me back one for an application screen, which one will take me back one for the OS, and which one will simply reload this content that I just downloaded off the web.
Mm.
But, I mean, the concept of copying one or the other, I think, has been really settled because Google is clearly pursuing a unique philosophy with Android that is different and opposite to what Apple's pursuing with iOS.
And now my phone is talking, and I apologize. I just Stitcher decided to start playing back some breaking news. Well,
is your arm getting tired holding that thing?
I love it. But people get mad when I talk about it, so I'm not going to mention it.
Although we went viral a couple weeks ago when I was here and you had your iPhone and your note next to each other and we took that overhead shot.
Yeah.
Somebody took a screenshot of that.
Yeah.
And that was going around. Everybody had that as that was like the example of how huge the note is.
Well, because they thought it was a rumor of a new iPhone Nano.
It's the little iPhone.
Clearly large one can't be a larger tablet-sized phone. No one would build that.
Yeah. Let's see.
Phone.
We're going to move on here. I'm just looking to see if there's any stories that I have missed. That I should have. I think we got them all in. The big story, of course, March 7th. And we're all excited about that.
Yeah.
When is that?
Oh, that's next week.
Next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday, a week from tomorrow.
So we're not going to be on next Tuesday.
Those of us on the East Coast barely have enough time to get our shots.
It's okay. California now, there's no more typhus.
It's cool, man.
Yes.
It's okay.
Just come on, hang out.
You'll be all right.
We've gotten rid of malaria in the Central Valley. It's been a mixture of nets and
Offenbach is almost a thing of the past.
Do not drink the water in Tulare County. Just warning.
No.
I really don't drink the water.
That'd be a mistake.
No, I'm kidding. It's fine.
We kid Tulare.
I'm going to get emails from Tulare.
Tenderloin.
Tenderloin. That's different. Yeah.
Throw out your shoes after walking through the Tenderloin.
So that is a programming note. This show, which is normally on 11 a.m. Tuesday Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. On Tuesdays, we'll be on Wednesday, and we'll start early, 9:30 a.m. Pacific, 12:30 Eastern time. And while we will not, I don't believe that Apple will be doing a stream, so we will not be able to do our little Mystery Science Theater 3000 talking silhouettes at the screen. We will, of course, monitor all the live blogs. Macworld will be there having a, doing its live blog, and everybody else, and we'll just synthesize that. Alex and Tom and I will make snarky comments. And then after, if we can, we'll have a camera down there. And afterwards, if we can, we'll try to play with the iPad 3 if they allow us. So that's exciting. That's that is next Wednesday. How exciting is that? And now would be a good time to sell your iPad 2. Which brings me to Gazelle. Gazelle is a great way. You know, look, gadgets move through my hands probably faster than most people, and Gazelle has been a great boon for me on taking the gadgets that otherwise just kind of gather dust in the closet of the drawers and selling them and getting cash for them. Here's what you do. You go to gazelle.com. I just entered iPad 2, and it said, you know, first it's going to ask you, well, if it's normal quality. In fact, mine is kind of beat up. $260 out the door. They pay the shipping on anything worth more than a buck. And here's a nice thing. You can get a check. You can get PayPal. You can get a Walmart gift card. But if you get the Amazon gift card, that's the one right on top, you get an additional 5% bonus. They kind of rebate their, you know, the Amazon affiliate fee to you. So that's really a great way to get cash. So let's see. I'm just going to add this to my shopping cart. And then I'm going to go back and, you know, as long as you're doing it, get a box and go through all your old stuff. Add more old stuff to your Gazelle box. They pay the shipping. Hundreds of dollars coming your way from Gazelle. It really is a great way to recycle your gadgets. And if you have gadgets that have no value, don't worry about it. Gazelle does eco-friendly recycling, green recycling. It will not land in the landfill. It will not go overseas. They use green recyclers to take advantage of all of the, you know, the good stuff that is in your old electronics. Don't sell it. Gazelle it. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. And remember that the price, in fact, if you do, I'll show you what they do. They give you a really neat graph of how the price is dropping. If you do the iPad, because it's like a special thing. But if you do most devices, let's say a Galaxy 2.
My Zune is worth $64.
They'll show you a graph. And the thing to understand is that prices are dropping every day. So let's say no noticeable flaws. I got all the things. It is free of water damage. Yes. And then continue. It's going to give you the offer. And then I guess they don't do that anymore. They used to have this graph. It was so cool of the value. And the point being that it drops rapidly. So every day you wait is a day, a dollar or two less you're going to get. Take advantage of it now. Get those gadgets together. When the iPad 3 comes out, I can guarantee you the iPad 2 will be worth less than it is right now. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. If you know you're going to get an iPad 3, do it. Don't waste any time. Gazelle.com. Recycle and get some money while you're at it. It's time for our – do you want to do an iOS tip, or do you want to save that time for your Photoshop demo?
I can do either.
All right, we'll do an iOS.
Jason has one too.
Jason? All right, Jason, you do it.
You got a tip?
Yep. Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
All right, here it is. Let me explain this to you. You get 5 gigabytes of storage when you sign up for iCloud.
Yes.
And let's say you've got a couple devices, an iPad and an iPhone, and you're backing them both up. Very quickly, you may get that that case where iCloud yells at you and says, sorry, I'm full up. Would you like to buy more? Would you like to give Apple some more money? And you can do that, or you can take control of your iCloud backup settings by doing this. Go to Settings, then tap on iCloud, then tap on Storage and Backup, and then tap again on Manage Storage. And you end up in this Manage Storage area where it's got your backups and also a list of other stuff that you're storing on iCloud. If you tap on the backup of the device you're using or any of the backups on there, you actually get this list of, I think it's the top 5 apps that you're using that are storing things on iCloud, that are backing up to iCloud. And all of the data that's on your phone or your iPad is being stored on iCloud for backup purposes. You can turn off app by app what gets stored in an iCloud
backup.
What
a good idea.
So the top 5 by storage size are listed, and you can also tap on the item below it, which is called Show All Apps. It'll list every app that's being backed up on your device. Turn the off button on the ones where you're like, you know, this is a podcast tool. It's just backing up my podcasts. They're available. I don't need to do that. You flip it off, and you're saving space as you go. And you can very quickly get back that space, reclaim your backup space on iCloud, and not have to spend money on more iCloud
storage.
That's
nice to have that granularity. So that's great.
It's amazing. Apple gives you complete control over what you're backing up. And so check it out in Settings, iCloud, Storage and Backup. Just tap around in there. You can save a lot of time and a lot of money if you don't want to buy, 20 gigs of iCloud space.
I wish they'd do that with PhotoStream. I'd love to just...
You can turn off PhotoStream.
You can only turn off the whole thing, though. I want to delete some of those photos. You know
right.
what I'm saying?
Right,
you know
that's
what
true. I know what you're saying. You can not back up your camera roll, though. And
that's what I've done.
A lot of space
that's what
to turn off the camera roll backup.
Yeah, no longer will I store those fun pictures I take.
I would like to say for the record that Jason's tip is way better than mine.
Well, then don't do yours. Save it some another time. Yeah,
Another week. I'll think
Andy,
of
do you
want
to do an OS X tip?
Yeah, this is a quick one. One of those cool little features that they've added to Preview in 10.7 is that they've added a lot of annotation features for PDFs, but they've also added electronic document signature. And we're not talking about the sort of thing where you use like a special key and it's digitally signed. It means that actually putting a facsimile of your signature on the document. I think almost everybody in this conversation has at one point to get a loan of a piece of hardware, you'll be emailed a document, which you then have to print out and then sign and then scan and then email back. If you are using Preview, though, you don't have to do all that. Just open up a file as a PDF. Click on the button to open the annotations tools. And there's actually a signature tool in that toolbar. On the dropdown, there's a really cool little widget that will let you capture your signature. Literally, all you do is you get a Sharpie, a good black marker, just sign a piece of card. You hold up the card to your EyeSight camera. There's actually a little box with a little blue underscore saying, and as soon as it gets a sharp image of something that looks like a signature that fills that box, boop, it captures it and it stores it. So you can store like multiple different versions of your signatures or initials or little smiles with happy faces. And then when you just click on the signature annotation tool, you can then simply draw a box and it'll plant that digital version of your signature right in the middle of the document. You can then save it and then email it as a file attachment, and you will get your new iPad 3 demo hardware. Oops! I didn't say that. I'm not under it.
I just discovered that last week, and it was stunning. Like, I was like,
yeah.
No way. Because it's always the hardest part is trying to get the signature, like no matter what you're going to do, if you're using some signing trackpad, program or whatever, it's am I going to use my touchpad or do I have to go back and get my Bamboo or some kind of Wacom tablet or whatever? And the idea that you can just sit there and draw on it and just put it up, and it has a whole system so that you can just put it up in front of your little EyeSight and boom, it grabs it and it works so well. Yeah, so that's great.
We let's see, we have some picks. Now, do we not?
Yes.
And I think since you're going to... Now, do we have an over-the-shoulder camera?
Let me work on that really quick.
Okay, so make... Because Alex wants to demo Photoshop Touch. Now, this is not PS Express, which has been out for some time.
Right.
This is $10. Photoshop apparently is including things like layers in an iPad app. And it's got to be, given the release timing, kind of aimed a little bit at the iPad 3 as much as the iPad 2.
So, Alex, we've got...
So, you're in the
there
shot.
We go.
There you go. Look, there's
and
Malachi.
Back of
or
is that Isabella?
No, that's Malachi before he got his haircut.
Yeah, I love those dreads. All right.
So, anyway, there's my
you're
little
gonna, bug. Yeah, you're going to have to reposition move. to get all of the glare
there
out of there.
There we go.
You go. Yeah.
Maybe over to the right a little more?
More to the right. Oh, okay.
Nice.
$10. It's in the store now.
So this is what happens when I leave my iPad laying around the house, is I get tons of little photos of my kids down.
So he took that. That's
oh, yeah,
cute.
He took that of his.
That's
of
really cute.
They take lots of pictures of the ceiling and of themselves. So anyway, so so the thing is, of course, you can, zoom in and out. And it really is, I find it to be, fairly fluid. You can... what's interesting is here you can go new layer, and I can say I want to, I can delete these are the different controls over the layers. That's the layer control. If I want to add a new layer, I can say I want to duplicate that layer, for instance. And so now you can see two layers that are there. Now you have effects, which are the only thing I'm kind of surprised at is they didn't do some kind of live effect where it shows
wouldn't that be nice?
The pieces. And I will say the one thing about the Photoshop Touch is that it doesn't feel as iPad-y as I would have expected it. It feels very, it's not quite as
that's too bad.
But I think that those are all things they can add. Now, here's the Gaussian blur, and you can see that it's fairly responsive. I mean, it isn't doing it fluidly when you're moving it, but as soon as you let go, you know, you're getting that. And I can go in here, for instance, and let's say blur it. I can say apply. I can go back here and say layer controls, and I want to change my blend mode and make it screen so it kind of has that kind of, maybe pull it back a little bit. And so, you know, I have a lot of control there. You know, obviously you have, you know, you can go in here and start to do extractions. One of the things that I think is pretty revolutionary beyond the actual piece here. Now, by the way, some of the stuff you wish you saw in regular Photoshop. Look at these curves.
Really?
Look at the curves.
Yeah.
I just grab
How
it.
Easy is that? Huh?
I mean, it's just this beautiful. Yeah. You can't see it a lot because I'm applying it to the top. I can grab the bottom layer here. And the curves, for instance, I mean, any of these controls, but when you look at the levels, you know, I wish levels looked, you know, like this, you know, in the actual,
in actuality
there. I think there's a little rendering error there right now. But anyway, the I have to say, if you're taking photos and you want to edit them, there's a lot of great edit tools. Snapseed is, I think, one of my favorites of just grabbing great things. But if you want a little bit of more control, this is definitely one of those apps that is a must own to edit in the field of pictures that you're taking. It's truly, truly amazing. One of the things that I really like about it is see this tutorials. This is so well thought out, and I'm surprised that other apps haven't done this in the past.
You might just buy it for the tutorials.
Yeah, look at this. So what's really cool is they integrated it to the application. So you say, okay, mm-hmm. This is what we're going to show you how to do. And we're going to say begin tutorial. And look, see down here? Step one, and it has a little. It tells you exactly what you want to do. This is how you want to handle it. So you can click this little button, and now it's here. And I can say, okay, go forward. The graphic is too large. Let's transform it, and it gives you a little pointer to go to it. And so this is one of the hardest things when you get a new one of these applications is trying to figure out how to actually use it. You know, and so it gives you a lot of these tutorial. This tutorial is so well done. As far as integrating it completely into the application, so it's not something you're reading separately. It's integrated into it. It allows you to, you know, really do a lot of these things, you know, by just following the instructions. I did a couple of them all at one time. Anyway, there's little tips that pop up, so you can say, okay, I want to set that to darken, and it tells you what darken means. It's really well integrated, and I think it makes a massive difference on how quickly you'll take full advantage of the application is the fact that, and I think that literally incorporating the tutorial process into the application doubles or triples its value because, you know, you will use the whole application. You could spend literally a lunchtime going through all the tutorials and you will understand fully what's there. And I'm, you know, I challenge other, other programming folks to really take that on, because I think that Adobe knocked it out of the park with that. So anyway, it's for $9.99. My question is really, when do they start making more money with the iPad version than the real version?
Well, they'd have to sell what? How many more?
Yeah,
I mean it's 1/70th or something.
But remember, a lot of those are upgrades, and question is how many people are upgrading?
Right.
I mean, you know, that's
right.
That's always the challenge. And so, I mean, I think we have a lot of computers that have older.
I bet you people buy both.
Oh yeah, guess, no, I think they'll buy both, but I think that. I think that you'll see a lot of people.
So that's not PS Express. It's Photoshop Touch, and it is available now in the App Store. There's no iPhone version, obviously.
iPad 2 only.
iPad 2 only,
but at $10, this is really...
That's a great deal.
You're
going to
get every penny. Yeah,
you know what? You're right. Everybody who does photography at all...
If you ever want to edit anything that you're going to put up, if you're blogging from your iPad, if you're adjusting it, sending it to friends, I mean, if you're taking any photos with your iPad, you should have this.
You should be using it.
Yeah.
Mr. Jason Snell, do you have a pick for us, my
friend? I do.
Yes.
My picks are related to the text format called Markdown. I actually write most of my stuff in Markdown now. It's basically, you can write with italics and bold and hyperlinks and stuff without actually needing an app that supports those things. You can just use plain text. And then the Markdown script converts it and makes it all pretty and stylized. And most of the Macworld writers use that now, and a bunch of other people.
Really?
There is a nice utility for $4 by Brett Terpstra called Marked at markedapp.com, and it's in the App Store, I believe, too. And basically, you drag a Markdown file on it, and it shows it to you in a full HTML preview. So you can be working in one app writing, and as you're writing, the other app marked is updating and showing you exactly how it'll look like when it's on the web. So you can sort of have this two-pane view, which is really nice. So that's a nice little utility. And then I also wanted to mention another Markdown-related thing. There's this new format called Fountain, which is based on Markdown, but it's for screenplays. And it's from John August, the screenwriter, and he's also working on an app called Highland, which basically converts from Fountain to Final Cut or to Final Draft format and back, so that you can actually write in plain text and then drag it on this app and it'll convert it into a final draft file, which is pretty clever because it means that for people who are aspiring screenwriters maybe but they don't have access to Final Draft, they can write a plain text screenplay format and there will be a sort of standard for understanding how it works. So it's a bunch of interesting stuff going on with this Markdown-related stuff where you're writing and you're not really concerned about the output. You're writing this sort of standard format.
Right.
And then there's an app or a script or something that turns it into whatever you want it to be at the end.
Wow.
So it's cool
Neato.
Stuff.
Neato. It's called Marked, M-A-R-K-E-D. It is in the App Store or markedapp.com.
Yeah. $4.
$4? Andy and Atco, your pick of the week, sir.
My pick is a nostalgia trip for
it's
people
Donkey
of a certain
Kong.
Age.
Oh, Rampage.
No. It's Rampage.
It's actually
Midway Arcade. Midway has done an iPad version of their classic 80s arcade games.
I love this.
Yeah, and they've done that in exactly the right way, though. Yeah. They didn't try to update them and make them HD. Mm-mm. They just simply said, let's just take the ROMs we already have. We'll just have, like, sort of a MAME player for them. A very pretty, like, 3D. Oh, you're going through a 3D arcade, and you get to click on the machine that you want to actually play. But the idea is that I think they've clicked into the idea that those of us who grew up playing games like this, like Defender, like Tapper, like Rampage.
Joust!
Is Joust on there?
Joust is on there. Oh yeah.
I was playing Defender all night. I loved it.
It's like a dozen games for dirt cheap. It's sort of like we want to hear Elvis Costello, My Aim Is True, the original album. We don't want to hear the cast of Glee perform their version of it in 2012. So yes, this will take you right back to the Candlepin Bowling Alley.
Neat.
Where you used to go like twice a week and spend every quarter that you could dig out of every payphone that you've discovered on the walk over to the bowling alley so that you could play as many of these games as possible. It is completely accurate. There are only two quibbles with it. Number one, I would much rather just see a simple like grid of game titles like click on. They just give you these stupid, laborious. There's a 3D version of this huge arcade with all these games in it that you can't really see what games are there until you tap on one of them, and then they do this extremely stupid and laboriously slow camera move to show you how well they do OpenGL to get to the game cabinet. Also, the game controls themselves are they try to approximate the buttons and the joysticks you would have with the original game, so it takes a little bit sometimes to sliding your thumb across the screen to approximate a joystick. I kind of wish they'd just done, since the joysticks themselves were simple up, down, left, right sort of things.
It doesn't work with like the iCade.
It doesn't work
like
with
that.
The iCade. Oh, I actually tried
so
it,
cool
but it's a Bluetooth.
Did.
It's a Bluetooth key binding thing, so they could update it to do that.
That would be.
And
really
Andy,
cool.
I agree. Joust is really, they've got a joystick for Joust, a left right joystick, and maybe that's what the original arcade game had. But really, it was a left and right button.
So they just made a mistake,
and it doesn't work right.
Right, should be a button that you flap the wing.
Yeah, but I'd much rather have a physical clicker. Yeah. So it would work better.
I was looking forward most to Defender, and it's almost like I want to like dip my thumb in like some sort of like olive oil just so I can get more like action up and
oh well.
Or maybe I've just lost my game since I was 11 years old. I was quite the champion at the Dig Dug and at
what
the Tapper.
Fun. So there is Atari did the same thing.
Yeah.
I think it's good that Midway did this. That's great.
Yeah, it's great. They just need some either
controls
kind of
have always
work
been
with
the
iCade or something else, or even with a Bluetooth keyboard or something, because you need a physical control for a lot of those games.
Yeah.
But it's really was cool to play Joust.
It is funny to take all those things that haven't been making a lot of money in the last 20 years.
And there's a nostalgia. There's a whole nostalgia thing going on, right?
It's like 99 cents, and you get like 7 or 8 classic. I would have paid $4 for Joust.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a great deal.
It really, It really is like just like, you know, a couple generations ago, nostalgia were like the music that you listened to when you were a kid in the 50s. And then the next generation was, well, the nostalgia is based on the movies you watched when you were a kid right. in the 60s and 70s. For our generation, we're not exactly young. It's like, no, the arcade games that we used to play in the 80s and even like the home console games we used to play in the 80s and early 90s. That was like, oh, boy.
I just want to point out, I was an adult at the time and did, in fact, after my airship shift on the radio show, go down to Chuck E. Cheese and play Battle Zone until all hours.
Well, that's okay, because as a DJ, you were paid in quarters.
But it is fun. It's nice to have a game that you could play without putting quarters in, because I still have this vivid recollection of putting in money.
Well, the app costs four quarters.
Yeah.
After that, though.
God, that's...
Also, on top of that, I like these games where you can get in, play for like 15 or 20 minutes,
they're
and get
casual.
Out again.
They're fun.
You don't have to get invested in storylines and characters and spend 3 hours figuring out, oh, so to pick up the sword, I... Jump to the left, jump over, reach down, reach back, and then reach down again, and now I have the sword. If this were for 25 cents in 1986, I would have been killing so many people over the past 3 hours instead of figuring out how to pick up the damn weapon.
So my pick is, I've been lately, I don't know why, I've been kind of interested in microphones for the iPhone and the iPad. I've been using Audioboo, and I wanted to record stuff. And Chris Marquardt, who does, you know, great photographer and a photo guy, and he does a podcast, turned me on to this. This is from Studio Projects. It's not cheap. It's $179. It's called the Little Square Mic. But I think you will testify, Alex, to the solidity of this.
Yeah, it's metal. Heavy.
It's heavy. It says that they use a 35mm von Brommel und Weber style cardioid transistor. You could see, if I tilt it just right, it's a big capsule condenser in here. It does require a phantom power. But what's interesting is the couple of things. First of all, it is a USB mic. In fact, I just out of curiosity, I haven't tried it yet on anything. It just came before the show. But I can try recording to my Amadeus here. Let's record a little something on this little square mic and see how it sounds. Let me play it back. I don't know how it'll sound. Let's record a little something on this little square mic and see how it sounds. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds very clean. Great. Sounds great. It's a cardioid, so it means it's directional, so it won't pick up stuff behind the mic. But here are some of the nice features that are unique. First of all, it's fairly compact, which is, we don't have to play any more of that. The audio device just died because I unplugged it. Thank you. It's fairly compact. It's flat. In fact, if you compare it to the iPhone, it's roughly the same size and shape as an iPhone. A lot heavier, though, because it feels like solid steel. USB, it has a mini USB jack, and it comes with a cable. But it also has a mini XLR jack, and that's one thing that makes it unusual. And comes with the cable, which is very nice.
Those cables are hard to find.
Yeah, so to connect this to a regular microphone input on a mixer or whatever it is you're using. But remember, you'll have to have phantom power. This does require phantom power. And I like the form factor because you have threading for a standard mic, so you could put this on a mic, and it would actually look pretty cool. But you could also just use it as a stand. In fact, if you tighten it, it'll stand on the table just fine, and that's kind of nice. You can use this without getting right into it. Now, remember way back when Andy figured out that you could use this as a mic input to the iPhone? This is the USB camera kit.
Can you?
I get this. The accessory is not supported by the iPhone, but I noticed that despite that fact, I can still use it. So I think that's kind of encouraging. Here, I'll plug this in the USB.
Oftentimes it's a problem with power. You might have to plug it into a powered USB hub before you plug it into the adapter.
Some microphones will work without, and some
I should try it on the iPad. Yeah, I should try. I notice it is moving the meter, so perhaps it's working. I don't know.
Scratch it. Make sure. I don't know.
No, this is it. Oh, you think it might be the... Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
It's not. Okay, so that's good to know. So this will not work with an iPhone, maybe with the iPad.
You might need to power
try
it.
If I power it?
It'll work with the iPad? Plug into a powered hub.
There's a whole generation. I think Blue Microphones now has one that they engineered to work with the iPad because if you get over a certain amount of power, it doesn't work.
It's going
to
drain it. Yeah, that makes sense. So anyway, that's good. I'm glad we tried that fresh on the air. Don't use this with the iPhone or the iPad.
It sounds great.
But the sound quality was very nice, and I think this is going to be my carry this around with me. As I travel, so that I can record commercials and stuff.
As soon as we finish the show, I'm going to steal it from Leo and take it into the lab for about 15 minutes.
It is not cheap. It is $179 on Amazon. It does come in four colors. So if you've been looking for somewhere to buy a pink microphone, ladies, your search is over. The little square mic. Some guys like pink microphones. Notice I bought red. I just thought that looked kind of nice and different. They do have black and white as well. And it is from a company called Studio Projects. And as I said, also available on Amazon. And the sound quality does seem quite good. Chris was using it not even very close to his mouth and getting pretty good results on it. So we shall play more with that. We've also played with the Apogee mic. And I like the quality a lot on the Apogee mic, but that was USB only. It didn't have this additional feature of having an XLR.
The one we've been looking at is the Yeti, because the Yeti has an XLR, the Yeti Pro.
It is so
has
big.
XLR, but it was really big. It just has really high quality, and I've been looking for something smaller. That's why I was so excited when you brought that in. I was literally like about to buy a bushel of them. So.
Yeah. Well, it's my guess that this is. I'll tell you what. Here, go test it and let us know.
I will.
But just from that little bit, I'll tell you what. I will do some more recording on it and post those on my blog and. People can listen. That's what I've been doing with the mics.
We should do a side-by-side with the Yeti. Just as
I would love to do that.
I have that in the other, room.
I like how what our picks say about us. I as a writer, chose a writing system, and Alex is an image guy, took Photoshop. Leo's got a microphone, and then, of course, Andy...
He's a gamer.
...has a 80s video game app.
Actually, that's me writing about 11,000 words between like 7 p.m., but like between yesterday and today, and then realizing I take the seat. Oh, wait, I haven't selected a pick yet. Oh, damn it. What's on my iPad right now that I love? Oh, wait, I do love that. Okay, that's good. That'll work.
We liked the Apogee quite a bit. It was a good looking mic. It felt solid. This is a little more compact and has a little more flexibility. So what it doesn't have is the volume control on the side, which the Apogee had. But that made me nervous because I was afraid that it would get accidentally tapped.
Yeah, it looks great.
I would rather control the volume at the recording unit than in the microphone. Neither of these have the one thing that you really want, which is a tap, so you can listen directly instead of having to listen to
zero latency.
Yeah, zero latency tap. And I don't know why they don't put that on these. That would really be very very handy. Hey, we have run out of time. Apple is up $9.65 today to $535.41. I'm guessing that has something to do with that invitation, which is bizarre because everybody's known that they were going to do an iPad 3. But the market, I guess, was just waiting. So the other shoe dropped up $10 to $535.41.
It's because of us.
Yes.
It's because of us. They were listening.
Went up during our show.
Thanks, everybody, for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time on twit.tv. That's 1900 UTC. Remember, next week we'll be doing it at a different time because we'll be covering live the iPad 3 announcement, and that'll be starting at 9:30 a.m. Pacific, 12:30 Eastern time on twit.tv on Wednesday, March 7th. So we'll see you then. That should be pretty darn exciting. And Jason and maybe Andy will be there, and if so, we will make sure that they give us their hands-on impressions of the new iPad 3. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Now get back to work. Break time is over.